That's Barb's.
Oh.
Light?
Oh.
Yeah.
Where's the light?
It's up in front of you.
It is?
It's behind, I can see yours over there, Mary.
I have mine. Oh, now I can, and that means it's on?
Yeah.
Okay, terrific.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for attending this meeting of the Air Resources Board. If you're here for something else, you're in the wrong place. This is the May 27th meeting of the Air Resources Board. And we're assembling. We have a few board members who are still here to arrive, but I think we should get started. And so we will open our meeting, as we always do, with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, my nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I feel a little bit uneasy sitting in this chair with the chairman sign in front of me, although I am the chairman of the Air Resources Board. We're sitting in the board chambers for the San Diego County Board of Supervisors, and we have with us Ron Roberts, who's hosting this meeting. Do you want to say anything to open the meeting?
Well, I think it would be appropriate to say welcome. We're delighted that once again we have the California Air Resources Board meeting here in San Diego. And, of course, you brought us good luck at the Padre game last night. And I think if we could guarantee it, the Padres would welcome you back every night.
Oh, wonderful.
If that would be your fate. But I think for many people who are interested in the work of the Air Resources Board, it's good to have you in this part of the state. And I know that some of the folks who are going to be here testifying from Imperial Valley appreciate that they had a shorter distance to come for this hearing. So we're delighted to have you here. We hope you enjoy everything. We've tried to prepare some warmer weather for you.
We appreciate all you've done, and we certainly appreciated the game last night. It was one of the more exciting baseball games I've ever been to, so it was great, and the result was certainly good, at least for those of us who are Padres fans. I know there might have been a few others, but anyway, it came out right. So just to briefly announce about the building that we're in, it could become necessary if there were a fire alarm or emergency to evacuate the building, in which case an alarm would come on with flashing lights and instructions, and there's an exit at the back of the chambers, as you can all see, as well as stairs that go outside the building, both to the left and the right. So should there be an emergency, please walk to the nearest exit and go down the stairs. Do not use the elevators because they will be inoperable. Anybody who wants to testify on any item should sign up with the attendant outside the boardroom. We request that you include your name on the speaker card, although it's not required. We do impose a 3-minute limit on speakers normally, so we appreciate it if people who have written testimony submit their written testimony and not read it, but just summarize it briefly for us. Our first item this morning is a report on the Imperial County air quality situation, and considering the particulate matter PM10 state implementation plan measure. And so I think we'll go directly.
Roll call.
Oh, sorry, we have to call the roll. Sorry. The clerk will please call the roll.
Dr. Bombs? Ms. Berg?
Here.
Ms. D'Adamo?
Here.
Ms. Kennard?
Justin.
Mayor Lubridge?
Here.
Mrs. Reardon?
Here.
Supervisor Roberts?
Here.
Professor Sperling? Dr. Tellis? Supervisor Yeager?
Here.
And Chairman Nichols?
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Okay, we will now proceed, since we do have a quorum officially, to the Imperial County item.
Thank you, Chairman Nichols. Today's staff will provide an update on Imperial County's air quality. Despite many unique challenges, the combined efforts of state and local programs have resulted in air quality improvements in the region, but staff will discuss the Imperial County Air Pollution Control District's proposed PM10 state implementation plan, which the district adopted in August of 2009. Due to a recent letter from EPA which stated that they cannot approve the proposed plan, we have modified our staff recommendation. Staff will walk the board through the plan and the implications of EPA's actions, as well as provide recommendations for moving forward. I'll now ask Ms. Elizabeth Melgoza of the Planning and Technical Support Division to begin the staff presentation. Lizzie.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. Good morning, Chairman Nichols and members of the board.
Good morning.
Today, I will report on air quality in Imperial County. Despite the unique challenges that Imperial County's geography, climatology, and proximity to Mexico poses for air quality, the combined efforts of state and local control programs have resulted in improving air quality in the region. Next, I will discuss efforts underway to further enhance Imperial County's PM10 fugitive dust rules and the 2009 Imperial County PM10 state implementation plan. Finally, I will summarize how we can move forward to continue to improve air quality in the region. I will start with an overview of current air quality in Imperial County relative to the federal air quality standards. Imperial County is located in the far southeastern corner of California. The county is bordered to the north by Riverside County, to the west by San Diego County, to the east by Arizona, and Mexicali, Mexico to the south. Imperial County's population is about 170,000, and the largest cities are located in the center portion of the county. In comparison, the border city of Mexicali, Mexico, has a population close to 1 million people. The principal industries in Imperial County are farming and retail trade. As shown in the photo, most of Imperial County is dry, desert area with little or no population. Imperial County experiences mild and dry winters with extremely hot summers. On average, they receive less than 3 inches of rain per year. Due to the rural nature of Imperial County, there are few emission sources. Mobile sources make up over 80% of the NOx emissions in Imperial County. In comparison, NOx emissions in the border city of Mexicali are more than double those in the entire county, and stationary source NOx emissions are more than 10 times those of Imperial County. Due to the arid desert nature of the region, PM10 emissions are dominated by fugitive dust. Windblown dust from open barren desert lands comprise more than half of these emissions. With paved and unpaved roads and agricultural and construction activities contributing lesser amounts. Finally, Imperial County is not only impacted by emissions from Mexicali, but also from the South Coast. The Coachella Valley provides a natural conduit for emissions to travel from the South Coast into Imperial County. Ozone air quality in Imperial County has improved significantly in recent years. Both concentrations and the number of exceedance days have decreased between 1997 and 2009. The number of exceedance days dropped from approximately 50 in 1997 to less than 2 in 2009. Imperial County now attains the 1997 8-hour ozone standard. PM2.5 levels throughout Imperial County have also decreased. The county has been below the annual standard of 15 micrograms per cubic meter since 2003. While Imperial County was recently designated as non-attainment for the revised 24-hour PM2.5 standard, considerable improvement has occurred since 2001, when daily PM2.5 levels throughout Imperial County were considered unhealthy. Today, unhealthy levels are limited to the border site of Calexico, and the standard is only exceeded by 1 microgram per cubic meter. While Imperial County is non-attainment for the federal 24-hour PM10 standard, concentrations exceed the standard on average only 2 to 3 times a year. These infrequent occurrences are due to two distinct types of conditions: naturally occurring high winds or transportive emissions from Mexico. These two types of exceedances occur under very different conditions. The next few slides will provide an overview of the nature and causes of each type of event. Imperial County's high wind events typically occur between the months of April and September. During these events, winds can reach levels of 20 to 40 miles per hour and can extend over a broad region affecting many areas in addition to Imperial. Due to the large amount of open desert land coupled with limited rainfall, elevated winds can suspend large amounts of dust throughout the county. In 2007, US EPA adopted the Exceptional Events Rule. The rule allows areas to exclude natural events such as high winds or wildfires from SIP planning. Because these types of events are not reasonably controllable or preventable, it is appropriate to exclude them from the regulatory requirements. Imperial County experienced three high wind events between 2006 and 2008. This photograph is an example of a wind event taken on April 15, 2008 in the desert area of western Imperial County. Wind speeds reached 25 miles per hour with gusts as high as 37 miles per hour. The second cause of PM10 exceedances is transport emissions from Mexico. The impact of transport from Mexico is seen primarily at Monterrey and Calexico that are within a few miles of the international border. These transport-related exceedances occur during winter when conditions are stagnant and emissions from Mexicali accumulate near the border. Increased burning and cooking in Mexicali, often associated with cultural activities during holiday periods, are believed to be the primary cause of the transported exceedances at Calexico. The Federal Clean Air Act allows areas to show attainment, but for international transport, when determining compliance with a standard. The 24-hour PM10 standards was exceeded due to pollution from Mexico on 2 days between 2006 and 2008. This photograph from the Mexicali newspaper La Cronica illustrates the reduced air quality on January 1, 2009 in Mexicali. The title of the photograph reads, "Due to the new year, Mexicali initiated 2009 with a dense layer of contamination from the use of rockets and bonfires. On this day, the Calexico Ethyl Monitoring Station recorded a 24-hour PM10 concentration of 186 micrograms per cubic meter." In this next section of the presentation, I will discuss recent actions related to improvements to Imperial County's fugitive dust rules. Best Available Control Measures, or BACM, are a discrete Clean Act requirement to be implemented within 4 years of an area being designated serious. Imperial County was designated as serious in August 2004. In response, the district adopted its Regulation 8 Fugitive Dust Rules in 2005 in order to provide for accelerated implementation. ARB staff concurred with the rules and forwarded them to US EPA in 2006. US EPA's final action on these rules is still pending. In February of this year, US EPA proposed a partial disapproval of the BACM rules. In April, the district board sent a letter to ARB committing to additional rule enhancements. However, in a letter on May 24th, US EPA expressed concerns about the scope of these rule enhancements and stated that additional rule analysis is still needed in order to determine whether they represent a sufficient level of control to meet BACM requirements. US EPA has committed to work with the district to develop the needed rule improvements. Next, I will move into the discussion of the Imperial County PM10 SIP revision. There are a number of different types of SIP revisions. A SIP revision can represent changes to district rules, emission inventory, transportation conformity budgets, or to demonstrate attainment of a standard. Requirements for each of these types of SIP revisions are outlined in the Federal Clean Air Act. The 2009 Imperial County PM10 SIP revision contains a number of elements including an updated emission inventory, transportation conformity budgets, and analysis of air quality between 2006 and 2008. Compliance with federal air quality standards is based on a 3-year time period. Thus, 2006 through 2008 represented the most recent data at the time of the SIP development. The maximum PM10 concentration during this 3-year period is known as the design value. Because high wind events are not controllable, they were excluded from determining the design value. In contrast, the international transport events cannot be excluded. However, the international transport provision of the Clean Air Act provides a mechanism for addressing attainment demonstration requirements. The next few slides will provide you with additional information about the natural event and transport days addressed in the air quality analysis. As noted previously, 3 exceedances of the federal PM10 standard due to natural events occurred between 2006 and 2008. While the federal 24-hour PM10 standard is set at 150 micrograms per cubic meter, average concentrations in Imperial County are typically below 50 micrograms per cubic meter. In contrast, on the 3 natural event days, concentrations reached up to 291 micrograms per cubic meter with winds up to 35 miles per hour. On each of these days, there were regional impacts with elevated concentrations in surrounding areas including Riverside County, Mojave Desert, and Yuma, Arizona. ARB submitted documentation to US EPA in June 2008 and May 2009 on these events per the requirements of US EPA's exceptional events rule. However, late last year, US EPA issued a letter that they could not concur with Imperial County's exceptional events based on the information submitted to date. In addition to the natural events, between 2006 and 2008, there were 2 exceedances due to transport from Mexico. The highest concentration was 248 micrograms per cubic meter, which occurred on Christmas Day in 2006 in Calexico. Transport events are limited to border sites where the majority of the pollution stagnates due to low wind speeds. In contrast, concentrations in the rest of the county were all well below 50 micrograms per cubic meter. Technical documentation on these events was included in the district's plan following US EPA guidance. The Clean Air Act includes specific provisions for areas impacted by international transport. If a state can demonstrate that they would have attained the National Ambient Air Quality Standard for PM10 by the applicable attainment date, but for emissions emanating from outside the United States, certain Clean Air Act obligations are relieved, including the need for an attainment demonstration and penalties resulting from failing to attain the standard. Due to concerns regarding both the high wind natural event documentation and the vacuum rules, in their May 24th letter, US EPA stated that they cannot propose approval of the PM10 SIP. Given these concerns, we have revised our staff recommendation and now recommend that the board take no action on the SIP revision as submitted. The SIP to US EPA would trigger a disapproval process. The remaining slides in the presentation will walk through the consequences of taking no action on the SIP and how we can move forward from here. Given EPA's non-concurrence on the high wind events, it is not feasible to revise the existing SIP and develop an attainment demonstration for an existing exceedance that is due to an uncontrollable event. Therefore, a new design value will be based upon air quality data collected over a new 3-year window between 2011 and 2013. However, the Backham rule improvements will proceed along a separate time frame independent of the SIP development process. Because a new plan cannot be developed in the short term, at some point in time, US EPA may issue a finding of plan non-submittal. This is a formal process that is specified in the Clean Air Act and requires a Federal Register notice and an opportunity for public comment. This would be followed by separate actions which would trigger sanctions, including enhanced requirements for emissions offsets and loss of federal highway funds within 18 months. In addition, US EPA would need to develop a Federal Implementation Plan, or FIP, within 2 years. We expect this overall process could take up to 3 years. In their May 24th letter, US EPA has committed to work with the district on this plan development process. As noted earlier, one important plan element is the approval of transportation conformity budgets. These budgets establish a framework for evaluating emissions impacts from new transportation projects by setting a cap on allowable future emissions from roadway projects. In the absence of these budgets, the local transportation planning agency will continue to use existing procedures that evaluate the emissions under scenarios with and without the project. However, a US EPA finding of failure to submit a plan could eventually trigger an 18-month time clock for initiating sanctions on federal highway funds. The remaining SIP concerns are related to implementation of US EPA's exceptional events rule. The purpose of the exceptional events rule is to provide a mechanism to exclude events which are not preventable or controllable from a regulatory decision making. The rule outlines specific requirements that must be met in order for an event to be excluded. The first requirement is a demonstration that the event was not reasonably controllable and that it was due to human activity, unlikely to recur at a particular location, or a naturally caused event. The second requirement is a demonstration of a causal link between the occurrence of the event and the resulting air quality exceedances. Third, concentrations resulting from the event must be above historically typical levels. Finally, documentation must be provided to show that there would have been no exceedance but for the event. ARB staff and other Western states have had a number of concerns regarding implementation of the exceptional events rule. The rule is a critical element in the state planning process to ensure that resources are directed appropriately to controllable emission sources. The rule preamble in numerous locations refers to an event as the physical phenomenon that results in an air quality exceedance. Thus, the rule refers to the high winds rather than dust emissions and wildfires, not the smoke emissions. However, US EPA has been focusing their review of exceptional events documentation on a detailed analysis of the potential individual emission sources contributing to an event. US EPA has also been conducting a detailed rule analysis despite the uncontrollable nature of these events, or whether additional rules would have prevented an event. Finally, ARB staff is concerned about the increasing level of documentation being required for these events and whether more detailed and time-intensive analyses are truly needed. For example, widespread and severe events such as the historic wildfire outbreak of 2008 in Northern California should require much less documentation than more isolated or lesser magnitude events. ARB staff has been working with US EPA to suggest a number of improvements to ensure the rule functions more effectively. Our recommendations focus on clarifying the definition of what constitutes an exceptional event, evaluating the appropriateness of adopted control programs, and streamlining the level of required documentation. We believe that the evaluation of whether a requested exceptional event meets the rule criteria should derive from the basis that the event is defined as the physical phenomena that occurred, such as the high winds or wildfires, not the resulting emissions. This is consistent with the actual rule language, which specifically refers to an event. In addition, because the natural events themselves are fundamentally not reasonably preventable or controllable, the rules assessment should focus on whether the control program is reasonable and appropriate for preventing exceedances under a typical range of weather conditions and emission activities. Finally, a determination on an exceptional event should be based upon the overall weight of evidence presented, and the level of the documentation should correspond with the complexity of the event itself. Staff has recently discussed these issues with the EPA administrator and are encouraged that the US EPA is committed to reexamining the rule and its implementation. This concludes my presentation, and we will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. This is, I think everybody realizes, a very complex legal and regulatory morass that we're in here. I intend to make a few comments myself about this exceptional occurring events process. process because it's one that I've personally been involved with for a long time, and I think it exists for the purpose of, as the staff indicated, trying to focus attention on areas where you have opportunities to do things that will actually improve air quality and improve public health. And as currently being interpreted by EPA, I think they are unfortunately, taking this issue in a direction which is going to cause problems all over the West and in rural areas in particular and areas that are impacted by wildfires especially. But we have had conversations. I personally presented this issue to the assistant administrator of EPA, Gina McCarthy, when she was out here a week or so ago, and they're going to take another look at this, and I hope that they will begin to rein in some of the excesses here that are actually putting people through a lot of hoops without any benefit. Nevertheless, I think everyone agrees that there are measures that can be improved, and I know that there's an effort underway to do that here for Imperial County. So why don't we just go to the witnesses. We have a number who have signed up. Thank you. And we will we'll take them, and then we can have some discussion. We will call on the head of the Air Quality Management District, Brad Poirier, first, and then we'll take up the rest of the rest of the witnesses.
Can you hear me now? Great. Good morning, Chairwoman Nichols and members of the board. Brad Poirier. I'm the APCO for Imperial County. Worked for the district for 17 years and as the APCO in the last 2 years. Staff did a good job of giving you some background. I know it's a lot of information for you to absorb. It's been 6 years of living this for the rest of us in the audience here. And I do know it's a lot of information, but I'd like to add some things to that if you wouldn't mind. I'm here to support the 2009 Imperial County PM10 SIP. It's a product of 6 years of cooperative work with ARB, EPA, and multiple stakeholders to formulate a plan that meets the requirements of the Federal Clean Air Act and expands the district's already aggressive policy to reduce particulate matter in the county. No other region in the United States faces the kind of significant challenges that we do in Imperial County. And I believe in your staff report, Section 1 gives you some breakdown of a profile of Imperial County, but I wanted to highlight a couple of the key facts in that section. And one of those is that our county covers 4,600 square miles and is dominated by dry, undeveloped, open desert. We also get much less than 3 inches of rain in the desert, if you're not familiar with our area. The county also shares about 80 miles of international border with Mexico, where significant amounts of smoke, dust, and other particulates and pollutants come across our border every day. On top of this, we have the Salton Sea. If you haven't heard of that, that's one of the largest inland bodies of water in California that's currently receding as we speak. And then we have a highly agricultural county. It also has one of the lowest per capita income in the state of California. And we also experience levels of unemployment rates that are consistently between 20 and 30%. That gives you a little bit of background for our area. Despite all these challenges, with the combination of efforts from ARB, EPA, the APCD, and our community, we have been successful in controlling PM10 levels as required by the Federal Clean Air Act and state laws. The SIP before you is the result of hard work by the district and ARB to assess the natural and man-made PM10 sources in the valley, inventory improvements, and adopt rigorous best available control measures and technology requirements, and set transportation budget emission budgets to ensure strong PM control throughout the county. This SIP meets all the applicable requirements of the Federal Clean Air Act and sets aggressive controls over those PM10 sources within the county's reasonable means that we can control. Give you a little bit more history on how we move forward with our Regulation 8. Those are our dust control rules and how we developed those best available control measures. The SIP process in the county has been a very long one, and it's taken a lot of effort from a lot of individuals, not only governmental agencies, but also academia, non-governmental agencies, and the general public. The research and planning of best available control measures for PM10 began over 6 years ago, back in 2004, when the district undertook a review of BACM in other areas to be used as a basis for new BACM in the county. We sat down with EPA in October of 2004 to discuss the influence of PM emitted from Mexico and from natural events and how that may impact the SIP that you have before you today. The work resulted in the first draft of the new Regulation 8 rules, which are numbered 800 through 806 in December of 2004. Over roughly the next year, the APCD organized a technical advisory committee and worked together with members of the community, with the community, EPA, ARB, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, BLM, the Border Patrol, local organizations, and the Farm Bureau and the agricultural community to get input on all the rules. We convened several TAC advisory meetings among these parties to discuss the proposed rules and incorporate input where appropriate. We also conducted 6 public workshops from May to June of 2005 to solicit public comments on the draft rules. Regulation 8 was developed to mirror extremely stringent dust requirements from other serious PM10 non-attainment areas like San Joaquin and the South Coast Air Management District. Because of that, Regulation 8 is just as strict or stricter than those districts, and we believe the APCD now imposes some of the toughest PM requirements in all of California. In August of 2005, we approved the Natural Events Action Plan, which your staff went through a little bit, and that's EPA's policy for exceptional events and high winds. And that was quite the accomplishment for our local area. As a result of that process, on November 8, 2005, the APCD adopted the new best available control measures and the Regulation 8 rules designed to reduce emissions from man-made fugitive dust sources in Imperial County. We also provided detailed documentation of natural events influencing PM levels. The adoption of Regulation 8 rules was an anticipation of PM10 SIP requirements, and the purpose was to adopt BACM rules and be able to document high wind exceptional events. We did this proactively. Industry did this 3 years in advance of any requirements. Putting together the serious non-attainment PM10 SIP was quite the feat, I must say, for a small rural district with limited resources and staffing. When EPA published its failure to attain finding in December 2007, we immediately began working closely with EPA and ARB to develop a PM10 SIP demonstrating expeditious compliance with the attainment requirements. We met with EPA staff in the county in February of 2008 to discuss the Regulation 8 rules and applicability of conservation management practices. During the visit, EPA staff were able to witness implementation of these management practices firsthand. We've done this several times for several iterations of EPA staff over the last 6 years. We continued to work with ARB to submit documentation to EPA in May of 2009 for 3 natural high wind events that caused 10 exceedances of the 24-hour PM10 standard at various monitors. This work enabled the district in August of 2009 to adopt our PM10 SIP, showing that Imperial County's PM control measures already result in attainment of the serious area PM10 standards, but for exceptional events and transport from emissions from Mexico. We submitted the PM10 SIP to your staff back in September of 2009, and now have the opportunity today to finally secure, hopefully, your approval of that plan. Last year, CARB staff came down to Imperial County, sort of a community forum where the community could share some of their concerns. And of those concerns, one of the major points was our agricultural burning program in Imperial County. Agricultural burning is a de minimis source in Imperial County. It's less than 1% of our PM10 emissions inventory. However, that being said, we heard their voices. We understood that. It's a concern of theirs. It's a concern of ours. So we worked together to try to address those. As a matter of fact, in about a month ago today, April 27th, Imperial County Board adopted revisions to our smoke management program, which was approved by your executive officer back in 2001. From the beginning, the process of developing the SIP and PM10 controls that compromised it was always a transparent and exhaustive one. The district undertook a very detailed review of appropriate PM controls in the valley, using the best available control measures available to us. The measures we proposed were based on a large amount of data on the relative PM contributions from a variety of man-made natural and foreign sources. Affected industries, the public, federal, state, and local agencies were given numerous opportunities to participate in rule development. As the ARB staff knows, EPA itself was substantially involved with review and comment on the SIP components going all the way back to the first development of the Regulation 8 rule starting in 2004, and even going beyond that back to 2001. Both the district and ARB staff have concluded that the SIP meets applicable federal and state requirements and represents an appropriate aggressive approach to PM control from man-made sources in the valley. We also both agree that the SIP fully describes the influence of natural and foreign sources of PM in the county, sources not under direct control, but which are important to track and analyze. We have flagged the PM10 emission data shown to be influenced by high wind events and demonstrated why the exceedances are not due to sources under the district's reasonable control. Under the district's Natural Events Action Plan, we have taken appropriate steps to protect public health by educating the public about high wind and wildland fire events, and by mitigating those health impacts by adopting dust control measures from those man-made dust sources we can control. All the measures taken together demonstrate a well-considered PM control and mitigation plan designed to help the county achieve PM attainment expeditiously while accounting for PM sources beyond the county's control. And I'd like to address a little bit of EPA's concerns. While we know that EPA has some residual concerns with the Regulation 8 rules, we look forward to working through those issues and obtaining EPA's full concurrence on the rules and this SIP. As we discussed, since 2004, EPA has been significantly involved with us and ARB in reviewing and commenting on the Regulation 8 rules and other components of our SIP. We feel comfortable that the SIP is well supported not only by the emissions and meteorological data we have developed over several years, but also by comments and input from EPA itself over that period. As ARB staff knows, understanding the various PM emission sources and contributions in Imperial County has required an extremely complex multi-year and multi-party effort. Approval of the SIP today will facilitate the continuing with EPA, and we believe we will be able to satisfy EPA's last few concerns and arrive at a federally approved SIP. There's nothing new in EPA's letter that you recently received. The letter doesn't raise any issues that would undermine or otherwise suggest that the approval of this SIP is improper. Importantly, while we are prepared to address their concerns, they do not take issue with the technical foundation of the submittal. It is not uncommon for EPA to disagree with ARB or local air districts, as recently shown with South Coast PM10 plan submittal and your recent approval. We expect that ARB approval of a SIP will only help the process of resolving these last few issues with EPA and will show EPA that ARB, the district, are united behind this SIP, and we believe it meets or exceeds all applicable requirements under state law and the Federal Clean Air Act. As my board has committed to you in their letter dated April 6, I believe it's in your backup appendix A, the APCD is committed to the continued development of cost-effective rule enhancements to the existing SIP and efforts to improve public health. I would like to publicly thank your staff and all their hard work, and my staff, some of which are here, and also our technical advisory committee members. We worked long and hard to get to where we are today, to get to this hearing. In closing, again, I would urge you to give approval to the initial original staff recommendation of Imperial County's PM10 SIP. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for all your hard work. Really appreciate it. Are there questions? If not, we will hear from the public. We do have one question. There's a switch to underneath.
I'm at Ron's seat, so this should be magic. I see your name here. I just have a quick question about the salt and sea.
Yes.
That really concerns me. In the event that somehow we're able to work this out, are you all thinking about the future and how additional emissions from salt and sea can be incorporated into whatever you work out?
Brad, you might want to address that one.
Well, definitely Imperial County APCD is always on top of that. We were part of the advisory committee for the salt and sea restoration. We are very concerned that because of water transfers and other occurrences that are ongoing right now, that the sea is receding at a rapid pace, exposing additional shoreline. Currently, about 6,000 more acres have been exposed. So that's something that's a little bit difficult for us to put our hands around at this time. We want to ensure that it doesn't become the next Owens Valley, and not only for the public health concern, but for the overall livelihood of our county. We do address it in Chapter 7 of our SIP to a small degree. There's not much control we have at this point, and as you are aware, I'm sure that there's ongoing litigation over the legality of those water transfers. So depending on how that comes out is going to dictate how much the APCD can require upon those water agencies or the benefactors of the water that's actually being removed that would have went into the sea.
And, of course, another branch of the federal government has been pushing for the water transfers
right.
at the same time that EPA is concerned about the naturally occurring events. So this is another example of how tough it is to deal with some of these events.
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
I have one question, and I believe the staff had indicated in their report that there were three events between 2006 and 2008 of the high wind natural events. Am I correct? That's all right. My question to you is, what about 2009?
So far, in 2008 and 2009, what we're seeing is reduction in the amount of exceedances to where in 2008 we had zero exceedances, actually, if you discount the transporter or natural events that has taken place. As mentioned by your staff and Ms. Nichols herself, the natural events rule that was recently adopted in 2007 by EPA is very convoluted, and interpretation of that across the western United States is different. All the rural areas and actually desert areas need that exceptional events rule as a tool for their planning purposes and for reaching their attainment goals. We've made some of the same comments. CAPCOA has made some of the same comments. Westar, NACA, all of us are concerned with the amount of effort and requirements are being placed into documenting exceptional events, as your staff recently mentioned as well. We'll continue to work with EPA to hopefully come to some kind of agreement, some kind of guidance document that's needed for all agencies. Right now, we don't have that. So it's very difficult for us to move forward with getting approval of any documentation for exceptional events.
And I can appreciate that and the difficulty of that. But, we'll just work through it. We'll just have to.
We'll definitely forge ahead.
Thank you. We'll now hear from members of the public, and we will impose a 3-minute rule. Obviously, we didn't think it was appropriate to do that for the Air District, but they're not commenting as a member of the public, but as a co-regulator. Okay, Mr. Aaron Moyola, I hope I'm pronouncing your name. Ms. I can see I got that wrong. Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business.
Good morning. My name is Erin Shoneman-Miola. I'm the executive director of CoLab Imperial County, which stands for the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business. We represent close to 150 local businesses involved in agriculture, construction, and general business, and those types of things. We have been involved with the process of bringing this rule forward since 2004 on the Technical Advisory Committee. It was a great learning process for us, and learned a lot more technically about air quality than I thought I ever would know. But anyway, moving forward, what came out of that is that we came out and we trained all industries within our own industry. We came out and we trained agriculture, we trained construction and all these other groups on the rule that is before you today. And we have seen a great benefit from that coming from within our industry. And also I think that you can see, based on the number of our exceedances declining, that it has been greatly successful. So I want to thank APCD for working with us on that and for basically training us on how to train our people. So thank you. I would ask that you would move this SIP forward today, that you would approve it, move it forward so that we can continue to work with EPA and seeing a final product come out of this. We desperately want to obviously have a state implementation plan instead of moving forward with a FIP. Also, this SIP not only meets all the requirements of the Federal Clean Air Act to lead APCD to meet attainment objectives, but it also employs backup measures for source categories, which is obviously extremely important. Our members have worked closely with Imperial County Air Pollution Control District to make sure that these rules are successful, and we ask for your support in completing that process. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindsay Dale from the Imperial County Farm Bureau. Followed by Luis Salvado.
Good morning. My name is Lindsay Dale. I am the Executive Director of Imperial County Farm Bureau, which represents approximately 800 members, primarily consisting of farmers, ranchers, and landowners in Imperial Valley. As Brad mentioned, this has been a very long process. The Farm Bureau joined a working group consisting of members of agricultural and business communities, along with concerned citizens of Imperial County, to begin the development process of the state implementation plan that you have here before you. This SIP represents very hard work from the Air Pollution Control District staff and members of the community, and a very, very long, tedious process of listening to and examining all concerns from the various parties. It also represents a very proactive measures that our community has taken to ensure the cleaner and healthier air for generations to come in our home in Imperial Valley. One such proactive measure, as Brad mentioned, was the development in 2005 of Regulation 8 to address fugitive dust. These rules were put into place several years before the SIP was adopted by our county, and as Brad again mentioned, they are more stringent than other areas. Monitoring data has revealed that the Regulation 8 is successful, as for only exceedance days since the implementation of the rules has been due to the natural events and transports from our neighboring Mexico, which we know we have no control over. In addition to the Regulation 8, again, community leaders representing agriculture, business, highway patrol, county fire, concerned citizens formed a technical advisory committee to develop a new smoke management plan to work in conjunction with this SIP. And again, it has been recently approved by our Board of Supervisors. These are only a few examples of the collaborative efforts of community leaders representing the many different branches of people in Imperial County. Imperial County Farm Bureau believes that, well, we've been involved with the program on all aspects of the process since the beginning, and we are very confident that the concerns and comments from all parties involved were heard, and they were incorporated where appropriate in this SIP. And for this and many other reasons, we respectfully request that you approve and adopt the Imperial County the Imperial County PM10 state implementation plan today, as you have before you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Luis Almedo, and then Anita Niklon.
Good morning, Chairman Nichols, members of the board. My name is Luis Olmedo. I'm Executive Director of Comité Cinco del Valle, Raleigh. So I'm here to request that the board, based on some fundamental disagreements of Imperial County State Implementation Plan, and in support of the evidence submitted by the USEPA, that this board not approve the plan. Now, we've seen a new recommendation from staff, and they did a wonderful job presenting this. There's a couple of things I just wanted to clear is that one of the pictures on the desert is it is a hot spot for off-road vehicles. It's also houses one of the largest wellboard manufacturers in Plaster. So I just wanted to kind of put a little emphasis on that. So at this time, we want to be clear that instead of doing a no action, that the board give clear directive to Imperial to complete all the necessary amendments as committed in the April 6th letter signed by Board Chair, Imperial County Board, and any other rule amendments that have been continuously requested by USCPA. Now, we commend Air Pollution Control District and CARB for recognizing EPA's concerns. And we, too, want to be part of looking at any positive support and measures and showing some unity up front in going through the next steps and really finding some solutions for air pollution problems. Comité Cívico, I know there's been concerns about legal repercussions, and Comité Cívico submitted notices of intent to file a lawsuit, but we're prepared to work with Imperial County to give them the time and support in their development of rule amendments, but only until December 2010. Now, this is a deadline that they've agreed to meet in order to, and they've actually submitted a letter dated April 6th that had some of the EPA's concerns. Now, EPA's come back with another letter in stating that was a good effort, but there's other measures that were missed, and I know that's probably something that Air Pollution Control District will look at, and I know CARB is now considering, has read it through all that letter. We're already in May, and Imperial should be in a race to meet a deadline. We also ask CARB board members to discourage any lawsuits from Imperial. Instead, is fighting new rules amendments, they should be in a race to complete and meet the December deadline. The USCPA has made initial determinations on limited approval, disapproval of the Regulation 8 rules for Imperial County. The final ruling is scheduled for June 15, which made up a significant portion of the plan. USCPA submitted a detailed explanation of reasons why they did a limited disapproval and pointed out weaknesses in the plan as follows. So some of the weaknesses that I found is example, Rule 806, Section E list, the conservation management plans intended to control emissions from agricultural land preparation and cultivation, harvest activities, unpaved roads, traffic areas, but these CMPs are broadly defined and that there is no other mechanism in place to ensure specificity. The absence of sufficient defined requirements make it difficult for regulated parties to understand and comply with requirements. It makes it difficult for Imperial County Air Pollution Control District or others to verify compliance of enforcement. And I know that the board has read through a lot of this. And so it's important that these measures are considered and that Imperial County Air Pollution Control District does implement these measures. I also wanted to read a couple of statements from our board chair, board of supervisors from Imperial County. Sent to the email yesterday, and he's urging the board to reread all the letters and concerns EPA has had on the SIP, and I'll read it exactly as it said. I urge you to reread the letters and the concerns EPA has had with our SIP. I ask you to take the time to reacquaint yourselves with the issue. Now, he also goes on and references the IED's, Imperial County's lawsuit against the IED. And in this, he states, the issue of air quality and protecting our citizens' health is primary reason for behind the lawsuit against IID and the QSA. Why should this be any different? He also states that litigation is not the answer. It is regrouping and presenting a revised amendments.
Thank now you, I know, Mr. Oledo. Your time is up.
Thank
sir.
You.
Thank you. And we do have the letter from, I believe it was distributed. If not, probably should be. Okay. Thank you. Anita Niklon, followed by Olivia Valenzuela and Emma Rosa Silva.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Anita Niklon, and thank you for addressing this issue. I live in El Centro, basically across from an agricultural field. And I just to illustrate an example, last Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I had to stay inside the house for all those 3 days, day and night, because we experienced wild winds. Even when my windows and my doors were closed, I could write my name on the table, and I'm not exaggerating. I'm very concerned about this because I have two daughters, and my youngest one, who is 12, had to miss several days of school already. It is crucial that you don't approve the plan as it is because it is too weak. It would be a negligent act. If you approve it, you will be sending a wrong message because, you know, right now, several residents in different parts of the county are being threatened by several projects that will add more pollutions, and I'm sure that PM10 will increase tremendously. I don't know if you have heard about Wind Zero, but that's, you know, and that's in the process. It's in our way. And just to illustrate an example, there will be like 53,000 rounds of ammunition per day. And as you know, bullets contain a lot of, you know, materials, hazardous materials. So therefore, we respectfully, and I respectfully request that CARB send this week's set back to the Imperial County Air Pollution Control District with the directive to strengthen it by implementing the U.S. EPA's recommendations or hold it until they improve it. This should be completed no later than December 31st, 2010, and only then will it merit review and approval by CARB and send it to the EPA for final approval. Remember that my family's health and the health of many kids in Imperial Valley is at stake. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Valenzuela and then Ms. Silva.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to express our opinion. The plan that you have before you is at best weak. Why would you approve something that has been disapproved and rejected by the state? The current Imperial SIP contains weak measures for fugitive dust rules 800-806, and it does not go far enough to ensure the particulate matter air pollution is reduced to meet the federal PM10 standards. Recognizing this, the U.S. EPA Region 9 in December sent a letter to the California Air Resources Board, CARB, calling Imperial County's continual violations of the federal PM10 standards inexcusable. The EPA's analysis of Imperial County Air Pollution Control District Regulation 8, Fugitive Dust Rules 800-806, outline the deficiencies of the Imperial SIP and how it could be strengthened in order to reduce the PM10 levels to reduce the health risks. The EPA analysis also highlighted how a number of critical SIP measures do not meet the standards of other California air pollution control districts, namely the SEQMD and the SIVA PCD rules that reduce particulate matter pollution from similar sources. At a minimum, the Imperial SIP should include standards that meet those of other California air pollution control districts because it is a serious non-attainment status. Now, I know this was a long process and a very tedious process. I did sit in on several meetings when this plan was being worked on, and I cannot emphasize how difficult the air and the PM10 is for the citizens of Imperial County. So we do need your help. We need your assistance, and I respectfully request that instead of approving this with a disapproval of the state, you send this back to the county so that they will rewrite with the recommendations I stated before and help us stay healthy. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Silva, and then Monique Lopez.
Good Good morning, members of the board. My name is Emma Rosa Silva, and I live in Calexico, California. My address is 801 Osorno Street. And we're here, and we strongly support the Imperial we support a strong Imperial State Implementation Plan, SIP, that will ensure the Imperial County will meet the federal PM10 standards and protect the health of our community. The risks that we suffer are children in the Imperial Valley, which live on the southeast corner of California, are three times more likely to be hospitalized for asthma than those in the rest of the state and portion of its population size. The county has the highest number of asthma-related emergency room visits, children from 5 years old to 17 years old. Why? One reason is that Imperial County has continuously exceeded the federal limits for a particular matter, PM10. And also, I'm saying PM10, the burning of the fields, which encapsulates the PM10, which contains pesticides and herbicides, okay, which we breathe daily when there's a burning of the fields, and are very risk for our health, especially breathing the problems that we have. And I also want to say that the current plan fails to protect the most valuable members of our community, which are our children and our senior citizens. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Lopez and then Julia Lester.
Monique Lopez with the Coalition for Clean Air, a statewide air quality advocacy organization. Thank you, Chairwoman Nichols and board members, for making the Imperial SIP a priority and having it on the agenda today. We really appreciate that. I'd like to thank CARB staff and also APCD staff for their diligence in working on this SIP and all their hard work as well. I'd like today to emphasize on a technical assessment report that the US EPA submitted to the California Air Resources Board and to the Imperial County APCD in February of 2010, and I believe it's also included in your packet as well. In that technical assessment report, they highlight the deficiencies in the current plan, and they make recommendations how to make the plan stronger. And by making those recommendations, they focused on what other air districts in California are currently doing and how the current measures in the APCD, in Imperial County APCD SIP, is not up to par with those other measures in the county for similar sources. I say that because we believe that it's imperative that the Imperial SIP incorporate the recommendations made by the US EPA regarding fugitive dust rules 800 through 806. And I acknowledge and I commend Brad Pora's commitment today, saying that that the Air District is willing to work with the US EPA to strengthen those rules. I also commend the Air Pollution Control District board members for making a similar commitment in an April 6 letter sent to you all. The US EPA has determined that Imperial County APCD has a weak plan, and the Imperial APCD has admitted in that April 6 letter that it can do better. Therefore, the California Air Resources Board must take the only appropriate action in this situation. They must keep the Imperial APCD accountable to fulfilling their commitment to strengthen the SIP. The California Air Resources Board has an opportunity right now to implement clean air solutions and serve the best interests of the community. Therefore, we respectfully request that CARB pass a resolution to send this week's SIP back to Imperial County with the directive, the clear directive, to strengthen it by implementing the US EPA's recommendations or hold the SIP until the Imperial APCD has strengthened the measures within it. The resolution should include a deadline for the SIP to be completed no later than December 31st, 2010. Only then will it merit review and approval by CARB to be sent to the EPA for final approval. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Lester, and then David Hubbard.
Good Good morning, Chair Nichols, board members. My name is Dr. Julia Lester, and I'm an air quality principal at Environ International. I have over 20 years of air quality experience, including over 14 years with the South Coast Air Quality Management District. It's good to see you again, Mayor Leverage. I have been involved in state implementation plan preparation since 1990. I led the PM10 strategy section from 1995 through 2004 at the South Coast District. I prepared the original 1997 PM10 state implementation plan for both the Air Basin and Coachella Valley, which is the desert area near Palm Springs and Indio, including the BACM analysis. I led the BACM rule development, including the first in the nation agricultural dust and street sweeper rules. And I led the PM10 reduction efforts in Coachella Valley, a serious desert PM10 non-attainment area that recently was brought into attainment with a recommendation to this board to send that SIP and attainment demonstration onto EPA, even though EPA had questioned the exceptional events and monitoring stations in Coachella Valley. I joined Environ in August 2004 and began working with the Air Pollution Control District shortly afterwards on their exceptional events identification, analyses, and documentation. And I've assisted them since then in the 2005 Regulation 8 development and their BACM analysis, preparation of exceptional events documentation, international transport event analysis, and the 2009 SIP. I will tell you that in my 20 years of experience, this has been the most thorough public process in my experience, beginning with the Regulation and BACM Technical Advisory Committee in December 2004, adding six public workshops, the November 2005 adoption hearing of the Best Available Control Measure Report and Rules when EPA supported them, the rules as BACM. We continue to work with the SIP Working Group and agency interactions beginning in January 2008 before any technical work was done through the draft release, six public workshops, and the adoption hearing. Also, it's the most thorough technical analysis of exceptional events and international transport in my experience. This is the documentation for the exceptional events. In addition, there were no comments on the international transport or exceptional events analysis during the public comment period. And then which is contained in the state implementation plan, which again is very thorough analysis and demonstrated attainment, but for the effect. Only 1% of the concentrations are above the standard. They are due to exceptional events that are protected against by the 2005 Natural Events Action Plan. So I would say that based on my 20 years of SIP experience and over 5 years of working with the APCD, with CARB, with EPA, and the local stakeholders, I firmly believe that CARB Board can be confident in approving the 2009 Imperial County PM10 SIP and the but-for International PM10 Transport Attainment Demonstration. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. Appreciate that. Good work. I don't think there's any disagreement on our part as far as the documentation on the exceptionally occurring events. But it's helpful to have that supporting information. Okay, David Hubbard, followed by Larry Cox and Mark Osterkamp, and that will be the list of witnesses unless somebody else has signed up but did not make it onto the list.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is David Hubbard. I'm an attorney representing Ecologic Partners, which is a consortium of off-highway vehicle groups and camping groups in Southern California. I've heard it said, and I agree, that this issue is complex from a regulatory perspective. But in many ways, it's actually very simple from a data perspective. Your own data, or that data developed by the district, indicates that on the vast majority of days, the PM10 per day is less than 50 micrograms per cubic meter, which is less than a third of the standard. The exceedances occur when there are wind events and the transport issue. It doesn't happen very often. I think it's about once or twice a year. But during those events, the 150 microgram per cubic meter standard is exceeded by a factor of two. I think it's close to 300. But if it weren't for those wind events and it weren't for those transport issues, we wouldn't be here. The district would be so comfortably within attainment, we wouldn't be having this meeting. And so what bothers me is that there's so much emphasis and resource being directed at issues and at activities that have no real bearing on the exceedances that have been identified. Let me give you an example, because my clients who participate in OHV recreation are often an easy target. The exceedances that have been identified that relate to transport from Baja obviously are not causally related to what my clients do. Some people believe, well, what about the wind events? Well, the wind events took place April 12, June 5, September 2nd. All of those fall outside the standard or peak OHV season in the desert. That season runs from October 15, basically to Easter, right around April 1st. So there's really no causal link between OHV use and even the wind events that have been identified as the reasons for the exceedances. So I'm a little bit concerned when I see both the EPA and even the Imperial District talk about we're going to focus more effort on controlling dust from OHVs, when there's really no data to support any causal link between that activity and the exceedances that are being that are causing the problem. So my clients are very happy to work with BLM and State Parks and with Imperial County and EPA about reducing what dust does occur. But I think it's important that we keep our eye on the prize, which is demonstrating to the EPA that there is very, very, very little that we can do to address these exceedances due to wind and transport. So let's not waste resources. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Larry Cox and then Mark Osterkamp.
My name's Larry Cox. I farm in Imperial Valley. Also have farming operations in Mexico and Salinas Valley. I think it'd be nice if we could encourage the EPA to pass a rule that it's illegal for the wind to blow more than 25 miles an hour, or it's illegal for PM10s to come across the border without permission. I think we would be happy to support that as a rule. I don't want to be redundant here, and I'm just here to support Imperial County SIP. I was involved in some of the technical work and giving public input, and I want to thank county staff and those from the community who were also involved in that. I just want to speak a little bit as far as what agriculture is doing, and one concern I have is that if you regulate that which can be regulated, that's basically pointing to us in agriculture, and farming in California is an absolute nightmare. I moved an operation to Mexico after NAFTA passed, and I lobbied against NAFTA because I didn't think that we could deregulate trade while we had regulated rules here, and I was correct in that. Our farming operation in Mexico, for lack of a better term, is kicking the crap out of our U.S. operation. We have more between TMDLs, between CUPA, PM10s, fugitive dust, don't get me started on water and diesel regs. Anyway, we've got a litany of challenges in front of us, and I love what I do. I sit on the California Leafy's Greens Board. Our company was indirectly affected by the E. coli outbreak 3 years ago. And the farming community, most of us are pretty libertarian and say, hey, don't tell us what to do. But we recognize that we are part of the larger community, and we do want to be good neighbors. And the things that we're doing now, we're running water trucks a lot more than we used to keep dust down the road. We're sprinkling a lot more. Between GPS on our tractors, we're able to do the work with two implements instead of three, so less passes over the road. With remote sensing, we don't have to travel down dirt roads as much as we used to. So, we are engaged. We're supportive. We still have more than a few who were anti-regulation, but as Lindsay and Aaron are talking about teaching, I'm one of those that they're trying to teach, and that proves that you can teach an old dog new tricks. And so we are on board. We are doing what we can. We do need to be eventually profitable. There's only so much we can do, so I just ask your support in being reasonable and helping us to remain competitive on the world stage. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good comment. Mr. Osterkamp, please.
Yes, good morning. Thank you very much, Chairman Nichols, for this opportunity. I'm Mark Osterkamp, just recently retired from being president of the local Farm Bureau. The I guess the message I would just like to bring to you today is that we feel that Mr. Perez has done an excellent job of gathering data, et cetera, to be able to end all this process and quit holding us hostage to an ever-changing perception of what's going on in Imperial Valley. We feel that his data is good data, and that we just like to go on and just move forward with it. The Farm Bureau has a very active good neighbor policy. We do our best. Larry is correct. We have been changing over the years. We burn a lot less just because we want to, and we're probably disking less, and we're using more water trucks, etc., just because it's the right thing to do. My daughter's an asthmatic, but she's out of the valley now, but during that time period we had problems, but that's just the way, not that everybody has to accept them, but so we have sympathy for those people, and we do our best, and we'd like to just bring that forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Osterkamp. I believe that concludes our list of witnesses. I will ask the staff if they have any additional remarks they would like to make based on what you've heard here today. All right, well, then this comes back to the board, and I will make a couple of remarks, and I'm sure other board members will want to as well. In a sense, there are no good options here, because legally speaking, we could either submit the plan, which would then be disapproved, or we could not submit the plan, which will then trigger eventually a finding of non-submittal. So either way, we're not exactly in a position to do something that will lead to an immediate good response from the EPA. In defense of our staff delay up until this point, I would say that they've been working constructively with the district on this measure, that they have concurred in the technical findings and have given support to the process that's going on here to upgrade and improve all of the dust measures that are in place, because I think there is a has been over the years a greatly increased recognition that whether or not technically there are violations occurring, still, there are situations where windblown dust is causing irritation and harm to people and communities, and that needs to be addressed. We also face from the environmental community here, the residents who spoke up today and others who didn't come, threats of lawsuits for not disapproving the plan and sending it back and insisting that it, is that we brand it as inadequate. And I think that's a very, would not be an appropriate response, frankly, because it seems to me that we've heard plenty today that indicates that there has been diligent effort going on here and a very meaningful commitment on the part of the local district to upgrade their plan. And I think we need to continue to work with them to make it possible, which is why we've ended up with this staff recommendation of do nothing. do no harm, right? Don't make the situation any worse by inflaming the EPA process or creating more opportunities for litigation on the disapproval side. This is obviously a judgment call as to what is the best way to try to continue the progress that has been made, and we've certainly heard a very eloquent plea from Mr. Perez, who would like us to send the plan on and give it our stamp of approval. However, I guess I come down on the side of saying that when you've got a letter from EPA pre-disapproving that action, it looks like it's a stick in the eye of the federal government as well, which isn't really going to be conducive to getting us where we need to go with the exceptional events policy. So I would support the staff recommendation, but I would also welcome comments from other board members if you would care to weigh in on this.
Madam Chairman, if I might, I think when you opened the item, you indicated some discussion on your part, and I think clearly that needs to occur again, because I think what I am seeing here is some lack of recognition of that exceptional events policy and how it actually works. And I'm thinking again about the boards throughout California that do have these problems. Imperial isn't just one of them. There are others. And I really believe that we need to help and facilitate EPA's understanding of this. I can't stress that enough. And I agree with you. It doesn't get done here in some counterintuitive sort of approval or disapproval, but it really needs the personal touch, and so I believe it while we may accept the staff recommendation today, really hoping that you shoulder that responsibility, because again, it just isn't Imperial County. It's going to be many, many other districts. And I sit on the board of one of those districts, and there is simply nothing you can do when the wind is blowing or whatever is coming across our borders is occurring. So thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Roberts.
Yeah, I think I feel the same uneasiness. Let me say, just, you know, Imperial is a neighbor of ours, and so as you might expect, I've been there on a number of occasions. And I have to testify, I've seen the dust. I haven't seen the 3 inches of rain, but I've seen the dust. So I know that, you know, I'll take on their sworn testimony that they do get 3 inches or less, as I think was testified. I visited there a few years ago at the request of one of the supervisors when a problem was burning of tires on the other side of the border that was causing a plume of impactful air. And to some extent, it mirrors what's happening with some of the other emissions that don't respect borders. And I guess the thing that is disturbing about this is that the argument isn't with us. It's between the district and EPA. It bothers me that EPA at the 11th, beyond the 11th hour, would turn in this kind of a letter. I think all of us, and I share with Mrs. Reardon, we have fires in San Diego. If all of a sudden that became counted against our efforts on controlling the quality of air, we would be in a terrible predicament. Somehow we would have to get God on our side, because there would be very little that I know of that somebody could point and say, well, get some more of the dead trees out, in spite of the fact that you're spending millions of dollars every year to do it, do a better job of controlling them, in spite of the fact that two-thirds of the county is controlled by the federal and state government, and that's where 75% of our fires start. They wouldn't be acknowledging their contribution to this, and one of the other agencies, EPA, would be saying, somehow you got to do something. I think staff has come up now with the only practical course, but I don't know how we can communicate a certain uneasiness with the way this came about, and really encourage them to work and understand the situation to the extent that there are other things that could be done that don't relate to this. And to see such a nexus between the dust storms and their exceedances, you know, it's just, you know, a little more paving isn't going to do it. If you've been out there, that's not the issue. So I hope that they could get this resolved. I'm wondering, I don't know, from a time standpoint, I mean, this really says let's delay this until such time as they can get it, get some kind of an agreement, you know, and let's move on. I guess it would then come back to us for approval. And we want that to happen. I hear their director speaking. I'm not sure if that's a wiser course. Sounds like that would be a less wise course than.
Well, I believe we've heard they are planning to expeditiously complete the changes to the rules that are already underway, and so we will have an opportunity to send those on. But I'm thinking, based on both your and Mrs. Reardon's comments, that maybe we should also formally respond to the EPA letter, and I would be happy to sign a letter on all of your behalf, making it clear to EPA how strongly we disagree with the way they're approaching this situation.
I think, you know, like in our two counties could be affected dramatically mm-hmm. by the kind yeah. of approach that they're taking, and I would like to see that. And if I don't okay. remember if Mr. Reardon made a motion, but if we could modify it to take the staff recommendation mm-hmm. and run with it along with direction.
Right. I'll treat that as a motion in a second. And
to
we can
accompany that with a letter crafted with our concerns.
Thanks. Ms. DiDamo.
I was going to suggest a letter, so.
There we go. I was going to suggest a letter as well. I think it's time to ratchet it up and maybe calendar it. Calendar it for a report back and let EPA know that we want to hear from them. I would also suggest to the stakeholders that, if they haven't done so already, contacting their congressional representatives so that they can contact EPA on your behalf as well.
Dr. Vollins?
I agree with my fellow supervisors about dealing with the bureaucratic hurdles that EPA is imposing. But I think what I've heard in terms of testimony today, both from people who want us to move forward and approve the SIP versus the environmental groups that are concerned about doing that, that there's been a lot of progress in terms of people working together. And a positive thing about this US EPA disapproval is that that's going to cause people to have to continue to work together and to make this move forward in a positive way for stakeholders on both sides of the issue. And so I just want to encourage that. What I've heard today, it sounds like people are moving closer together, and I'd like to think that our agency has helped that process. I know that Lynn Terry went down to at least one of these meetings, and I encourage that. You know, I don't think it's in anybody's best interest to have further litigation and fight over this. I think what we need to do is come up with the best strategy to deal with fugitive agricultural emissions, off-road vehicle, and dust generation. And it sounds like people are moving in the right direction, and we just need to encourage that.
Yes, Mayor Lovett. I think there's a, got it? Okay.
Just a kind of statement of question. I mean, EPA is an agency. It's also people, it's decisions. I think that's the...
You may have the mic on the other, the switch is on the left.
This is mine. That's yours? This is on? Okay.
Got it.
Well, at least as a elected official, I much prefer the table to litigation. But in terms of the EPA, I mean, it is more than an abstract agency. There are people. There's regional offices. There are national offices. I often thought EPA ought to. I mean, it would be nice to have their presence here. I guess where did this kind of communication come from, particularly at the timing? And it seems to me that there ought to be ongoing consultations with CARB and with the Imperial County District, and so we would not have this kind of sort of last-minute surprise. And I much prefer testimony to a kind of letter.
Mayor Leverage, we had been working with the woman, Deborah Jordan, who is the director of air for Region 9. We've been having discussions with EPA and the district that I think had been and have been very positive, but there was a point where she realized that it was likely that the board would act today to submit something that they felt like they could not approve. And, of course, we disagree with their rationale, but so she sent this letter, I guess, in a preemptive way. What we'll do is work on developing a response to that letter for Chairman Nichols' signature that would either go to her or perhaps Gina McCarthy. I mean, we have to decide who the best recipient of the letter is to make sure that this actually gets done, that they follow through. And we could also request their presence, and I know they would come to present to us when we needed them to come.
Yes, Ms. Burke.
Good morning. I would like to thank the witnesses. I think the witnesses today gave us great information, were very credible, all of the witnesses. So I personally want to thank you for coming and your efforts. Could staff just remind me, as a result of the recommendation, what actions are we going to take going forward? And what actions are we asking the district, or what does our vote then cause the district also to take? Can you kind of put those two things in perspective for me?
Sure. I'm Karen Maliano. I'm chief of the Air Quality Data Branch. In terms of the rule improvements that EPA is looking at and development potentially of a new plan, we are looking at the most productive approach would be to have EPA work directly with the district to work out those concerns. I think the primary role of ARB at this time would be to move forward with EPA on trying to get the improvements that we need on the exceptional events implementation process so that as we move forward, future events can be approved under this process. And as Ms. Reardon said, this is something that's very applicable not only to Imperial County, but many of the other air districts in the state, San Joaquin Valley, the Mojave Desert, et cetera.
Is it fair to say that the suggested improvements on the regulation part of the SIP plan is not going to make a significant difference to bringing the overall plan in compliance?
That's correct. They need to go ahead and do the rule improvements for EPA's approval. However, as we mentioned in the staff presentation, because EPA has essentially indicated until those rule improvements are in place, they cannot approve any exceptional events. We're really looking to a new time period moving forward, starting, say, in 2011, once those rule improvements are in place at the end of this year, before we can have a process where EPA could potentially approve future exceptional events and have a whole plan.
And so are we kind of hoping that the new time frame will have less exceptional events and that we might have a window of time that will make the numbers look better?
It's hard to predict. You know, as we've seen, there's variability year to year. In 2006 and 2007, we had 3, but in 2008, we had 9. You know, we can't predict those natural windblown dust type of events. So it's possible that you could have a 3-year period that had none of those, but the alternative hope would be that even if there were some in that period, that we've worked out the process where EPA then can be in a position to approve future exceptional events and still develop a plan.
Well, it does feel to me that our agency could take a lead and should take a lead in working with EPA, as my fellow board members have pointed out, and I very much would support that as well. I feel very torn, I do want to say, of not supporting the SIP and the efforts and the great work that has gone into it. So I think that we are in a very, very difficult situation, and I'm not happy about that, but I would agree with moving forward.
Okay. Yes, one more question.
Yeah, could I have one quick question? The topic of agricultural burning came up, and I was wondering what the status of those regulatory efforts. I know that San Joaquin Valley has kind of a model program. and I'm wondering to what extent they may mirror.
Actually, John DeMassa is responsible for that program, and he spent substantial time working with the district on improving that program over the last few months. I'll ask him to summarize what's happened.
Yeah. That was brought up, and I, you know, if there are things that we can do, we want to be doing them. I mean, setting aside the dust and other things, but I thought if we could have a little more information on that.
Sure. As you're probably aware, Title 17 in California law requires that all districts have a smoke management plan that satisfies a number of elements. And all the districts at this point have submitted plans that do so. We have been working with a district, and actually a number of districts over the last couple years, on improvements to their smoke management plans. Imperial County just recently submitted an amended smoke management plan, which did include some improvements to their program. We are looking at that closely at this point in time, and we'll be providing feedback to the district. In addition, we're constantly evaluating the air quality and meteorological criteria that we use to make burn decisions for each of the districts throughout the state. And we are looking very closely at Imperial County and San Joaquin, as you indicated, although they do the bulk of their burn forecasts themselves. But we are looking closely at those criteria to see if there are improvements that we can make in working with the district to further minimize smoke impacts to the public. So there are ongoing efforts to improve the programs statewide.
Okay.
Yes.
I have a follow-up question to Supervisor Roberts. So that dealt with the agricultural burning issue, but one of the witnesses testified that the technical document from EPA had made comments about how Imperial County wasn't doing as much as some other districts. I wanted to hear a little bit more. Is that actually a correct statement, or you know, where
yes,
is that coming from?
We've heard that statement, that there are some districts that have measures to deal with the dust issues or smoke issues that have not been adopted in Imperial.
Yeah, that gets at their EPA's action to partially approve and partially disapprove the rules. And there are it's all linked back to the exceptional events, unfortunately. So it isn't as if under BACM every district or state has to do identical rules. It depends on the significance of the source. And so that's, I think, one of the complications here, is that if you assume that a dust storm is controllable, then it leads to some interesting comments about the rule expectations.
Okay, perhaps we should draw this to a close then. I'm just going to restate what I think was the recommendation, which is that we accept the staff recommendation to hold the PM10 SIP at this time, that we commit to working collaboratively with the district to complete the rule modifications that they've already agreed to, as well as any other reasonable measures that could be undertaken, and at the same time that we also send a letter to EPA to strongly urge them to reconsider the approach that they're taking on exceptional events, and to make it clear that this is not something that California will support. I think, you know, informal conversations are good and helpful, but this is one of those where we really need to be more aggressive than we have been up until now. So I'll ask you to signify by saying aye if you agree with that.
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, that will be our discussion then. I think we need maybe a 5-minute break just to move the staff who are here for this item to the next group, and then we'll continue.
Yes.
just for purposes of planning, we will take this item and then we will also hopefully deal with the staff report on near roadway monitoring, take public comment, and then break. There is a board executive session over lunch. If any action is taken, we will report on that afterwards. But I believe most of the board will be, we're assuming that all of this, including the closed session over lunch, will be completed by 2 o'clock. That's our hope. All right. We are now going to turn to the report on the San Joaquin Valley Smoke Management Program and consideration of modifications to agricultural burning requirements, and I'll ask the staff to make their presentation.
Thank you, Chairman Nichols. To meet the requirements of ARB's smoke management guidelines, the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District developed a comprehensive smoke management program. While the San Joaquin Valley's program regulates and effectively caps allowable agricultural burning, in 2003, Senate Bill 705 was enacted, requiring the district to further limit agricultural burning through a prescribed phase-out schedule. However, the bill also recognized that economic and technological impediments may exist that preclude the complete phase-out of burning. Subject to ARB concurrence, the district may allow continued burning of specific crops if the district determines that certain conditions apply. While staff has determined that the district has met the statutory requirements to allow for some limited burning to continue, we also want to further encourage use of alternatives to burning. I'll now ask Patricia Valesco of the Planning and Technical Support Division to begin the staff presentation. Patricia.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. Good morning, Chairman Nichols and members of the board. This morning, I will present an overview of the San Joaquin Valley Smoke Management Program and ARB staff's analysis of the modifications to the agricultural burning requirements proposed by the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District. I will close with ARB staff's recommendation. Let's begin with some background on the San Joaquin Valley Smoke Management Program. Two state laws govern the management of agricultural burning in the San Joaquin Valley. In March 2000, the Air Resources Board adopted amendments to the state's smoke management program guidelines to minimize the impacts from agriculture and prescribed burning on ambient air quality. The guidelines emphasize effective planning and coordination among burners and air quality managers and use of the most technically advanced air quality and meteorology burn management tools. The guidelines resulted in strengthening smoke management programs throughout the state. In addition, in 2003, Senator Flores sponsored Senate Bill 705, requiring the San Joaquin Valley to phase out agricultural burning where economically and technically feasible. The San Joaquin Valley smoke management system minimizes the impact of agricultural burning on ambient air quality in the San Joaquin Valley. The system uses 103 zones throughout the valley based on topography and meteorological conditions. The system sets burning allocations in each zone to amounts that would not cause a public nuisance, impact smoke management, smoke-sensitive areas, or create or contribute to an exceedance of federal air quality standards. Due to the structure of the system, on any given day, burning may be allowed in many zones. However, the total amount of acreage allowed in each zone is limited to prevent air quality impacts. As previously mentioned, ARB is charged under state law with oversight of the state's smoke management program. Since the San Joaquin Valley has their own meteorological staff, the district makes daily burn-no-burn calls. However, ARB and the district consult daily to adequately address any burning that has the potential to affect regional air quality. The district also consults with ARB on technical issues involving forecasting of air quality. For program evaluation, the district must report all burning to ARB annually. As shown in the slide, agricultural burning has significantly decreased in the San Joaquin Valley. This figure depicts the trend of PM2.5 emissions from agricultural burning in the valley from 2002 through 2008. The improvement is a direct result of the parallel implementation of both the district smoke management system and SB 705. Based on yearly data of acreage burned, these practices have reduced the total acreage agricultural materials burned since 2002 by approximately 70% and PM 2.5 emissions by almost 65%. The remaining agricultural burning now contributes approximately 5% to the total PM 2.5 emissions in the San Joaquin Valley. I will now move into the specifics of SB 705 requirements and the district's implementation. As previously mentioned, SB 705 requires the San Joaquin Valley to further phase out the open burning of agricultural crops and waste between 2005 and 2010. In addition, SB 705 requires the district to establish best management practices for the control of other weeds and to develop and adopt rules to regulate the burning of diseased crops through the issuance of conditional crop burning permits. In recognition that for some crops, economical and technological alternatives to the open burning of agricultural waste materials may not exist, SB 705 allows burn prohibitions to be postponed if specific conditions are met. I will describe these conditions later in the presentation. The district addressed the earlier requirements for SB 705 through previous amendments of their open burning rule. In September of 2004, the district amended the rule to allow for conditional permitting to authorize the burning of diseased crops. The rule was further amended in May of 2005 and May of 2007 to eliminate burning of waste from field crops, prunings, orchard removals, and weed abatement operations, and to establish best management practices for other weeds. Postponements were adopted for some crops per SB 705 criteria. ARB staff concurred with these previous postponements. The district has adopted the final phase of the SB 705 prohibitions in two steps. On April 5th, 2010, the district amended their open rule to incorporate all SB 705 provisions, including the criteria that must be followed to allow for limited postponements. Last week, the district adopted a report documenting the assessment of the economic feasibility of alternative modes of disposal for the materials with a June 1, 2010 burn prohibition date, as well as those with previous postponements. Specifically, the district assessed prohibitions for vineyard removals, prunings of various nut crops, grapevines and canes, and raisin trays. The district also assessed provisions for other materials such as brooder paper, dead goats, and diseased beehives. The district also examined previously approved postponements for orchard removals and prunings for selected crops such as citrus, figs, and apples, rice straw, and weed abatement affecting waterways. Under SB 705, the San Joaquin Valley may postpone the phase-out of burning for any of the materials if all of the following materials are met. There is no economically feasible alternative means of eliminating the waste. There is no long-term federal or state funding commitment for the continued operation of biomass facilities in the San Joaquin Valley or development of alternatives to burning. The continued issuance of permits will not cause or substantially contribute to a violation of an applicable federal air quality standard. And finally, why we are here today, ARB concurs that the above requirements have been met. The following slides will walk through each of these criteria. As a first step, the district assessed whether there were technologically feasible alternatives to dispose of agricultural materials specific to each crop. Commercially available options included soil incorporation of shredded materials, chipping of materials followed by the use at biomass power plants as fuel, baling of straw for various commercial applications, and disposing of materials at landfills. The district then determined the most likely alternative method of waste disposal for each affected crop. To assess the economic feasibility, the district hired an economist who used information from a number of sources of profit and cost. These included the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the University of California Cooperative Extension, the California Agriculture Commissioner, Dun & Bradstreet, Risk Management Association, and the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The district also collected information on the cost of burn alternatives from orchard and vineyard removal contractors and the agriculture industry. Using all of the information described in the previous slide, the district used a return on sales metric to set a threshold for determining whether an alternative was economically feasible. That threshold is a 10% impact on profit. The cost of compliance represents the difference in cost between use of the alternative and the current open burning practice for the specific commodity. If the differential of cost of compliance is greater than 10% of the profit, the alternative was not considered economically feasible. The San Joaquin Valley has used this metric in all of its ongoing rulemakings. In addition, ARB uses a similar metric with a 10% threshold. The district analysis identified a number of crops that will no longer be allowed to burn. Growers in the San Joaquin Valley are already using no-burn alternatives to dispose of some pruning materials, brooder paper, and dead goats. Also, it is common practice to shred grapevine and grape cane prunings and incorporate them into the soil. Farmers also shred thick prunings and leave them in place to decompose. Brooder paper is sent to landfills and deceased goats are buried. Consequently, the burning of these materials will be prohibited beginning on June 1st, 2010. Next, there were several crops where only limited burning would be allowed. First, for large almond, walnut, and pecan orchards, burning of the prunings is prohibited. For smaller operations, the cost of shredding services becomes much higher on a per-acre basis and was not considered economically feasible. Thus, for smaller farms, the district has proposed allowing burning of only 20 acres per year. Limited burning beyond this amount would only be allowed based on a case-by-case analysis of individual economic impacts. Second, since 2007, the district has required a case-by-case economic justification for permitting burns of orchard removals of 20 acres or less in farms of greater than 100 cumulative acres. Based on information collected as part of this effort and on updated information gathered on grind and hold costs, the district found chipping becomes economically infeasible for the removal of 15 acres or less. Thus, the district has recommended reducing the burn allowance threshold for orchard removals to 15 acres or less per location per year, with a case-by-case economic determination no longer required. Finally, for rice, the district determined that burning allowance remained at 70% due to issues with the scarcity of water water for infield decomposition of rice straw, as well as the lack of off-field alternatives. Based on the district's analysis, there do not appear to be technologically feasible alternatives and therefore no economically feasible alternatives to burning for some commodities. One primary reason for technical infeasibility is the need for disease control. Since bee pollination is vital for California's agricultural industry, state regulations require that infested bee colonies be killed. Palm fruits, which include apple, pear, and quince, are susceptible to fire blight, a bacterial disease. Alternatives create a potential opportunity for transfer and infection to nearby orchards. Burning of infected materials on site is a preventative measure used by growers and beekeepers to help ensure the disease does not spread. Worker safety and water quality preservation are the main reasons for infeasibility of alternatives to the burning of weeds along surface waterways. The labor-intensive removal of individual weeds, as well as mowing and tilling on steep bank slopes, creates worker safety issues and is technologically infeasible. In addition, spraying chemicals on the weeds can cause the chemicals to run off into the waterways. Lastly, the recycling market for the paper trays used to dry grapes on the ground has stopped. However, as growers continue transitioning to mechanical harvesting, a process that does not include the use of raisin trays, burning of raisin trays is expected to decrease. This last slide lists the crops for which the alternatives were determined not to be economically feasible. The most likely alternative to burning of vineyard and citrus orchard removal materials is chipping the material with subsequent use as fuel at biomass power plants. Grape and kiwi vine cultivation requires use of wires to support the vines. As vines mature and age, the wires become deeply embedded into the canes and cordons. To avoid mechanical damage to chippers, the embedded wires must be removed. Wire removal requires intensive labor, manual labor, adding significant cost to vineyard growers. In the case of citrus orchards, chipping costs are higher than other fruit trees since the adobe soil adheres to the roots and the roots need to be separated from the trunk prior to chipping. In addition, the nature of ground citrus wood requires blending limited amounts with other materials. This limits the volume that can be used at biomass power plants. The second criteria in SB 705 is an analysis of funding of alternatives. There is currently no long-term federal or state commitment for the operation of biomass facilities or the development of alternatives to burning. Biomass facilities have received funding from the California Energy Commission via the existing Renewable Facilities Program and short-term federal tax credits through the Renewable Electricity Program tax credit. However, at these times, these programs do not represent long-term commitments. Ensuring the ability to finance and support biomass development by providing state-backed loan guarantees, government procurement programs, long-term contracting, and other financial mechanisms would help stimulate the investment necessary to build the production capacity and infrastructure needed. The third criteria in SB 705 is an analysis of the air quality impacts of the burn postponements. The San Joaquin Valley is currently designated non-attainment for the federal PM2.5 and 8-hour ozone standards. While the proposed postponements would allow some burning to continue, in practice, burning is substantially limited by the district's smoke management system. As described earlier, the system limits burning on high pollution days in order to prevent contribution to a violation of federal 8-hour ozone and 24-hour PM2.5 standards. In addition, per district policy, agricultural burning is not allowed in specified zones when no burn days have been declared for residential wood burning from November through February, the PM2.5 high season in the valley. The ARB staff also has evaluated the potential for the limited remaining agricultural burning to contribute to violations to the annual PM2.5 standard. Analyses were done for Fresno and Bakersfield using emission inventory data and speciated monitoring data. The estimated contribution of remaining burning is less than 3% in Fresno and less than 2% in Bakersfield. ARB staff finds that the district proposal meets the requirements specified in state law. However, we would like to continue to encourage expanded use of no-burn alternatives. Therefore, staff proposes a time-limited concurrence with the district's postponement and a process to help remove obstacles to further reductions in the remaining agricultural burning in the San Joaquin Valley. Staff proposes that ARB will provide an initial two-year concurrence with the district's postponement, work with the state legislature, California Energy Commission, and California Department of Food and Agriculture to obtain incentive funding to increase utilization of agricultural waste at biomass facilities. Work with the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District and biomass waste to energy facilities to develop permit conditions that will provide more certainty regarding the use of agricultural wastes. Reconsider in 2012 ARB's concurrence based on progress made to obtain incentive funding and any other new information, and provide for an extension of the concurrence if the statutory criteria continue to be met. This concludes my presentation, and we will be happy to answer any questions.
I do have a question, actually, which I just flagged because this has not been a major area of controversy, but the continued exemption for burning for weed abatement affecting waterways, I find this somewhat troubling because the issue of worker safety and water quality from doing anything other than burning, why are they burning at all? I mean, why would they be doing weed abatement in these areas unless it's to allow for cultivation of the land in those areas? In other words, if there's weeds there and they're not hurting anything, why not just leave them there? Why burn them?
I think the issue is that as the weeds grow larger and larger, they can actually clog the waterways, so they do need to get rid of the weeds themselves. And so then that's where the concerns come into play about what's the best mechanism for removing them. And then you do have issues if they used herbicides. You would have water quality issues of runoff. And because these are very steep banks, the workers...
Well, I understand, but from my previous life working on water quality issues, I guess I'm somewhat suspicious because some of the things that are labeled as weeds are weeds in the sense that they're certainly not productive crops, but on the other hand, they're not doing any harm either. They're naturally occurring vegetation that may have some benefits from a water quality and habitat perspective.
There is another issue. What happens is that if the weeds grow, around levees, then you have the rodents can come and start eating at the weeds, and then they start excavating, and therefore the levees could be a problem, so we don't want any flooding.
Understood. Okay, well, that's a better answer. Thank you. Other questions before we turn to the witnesses? If not, we'll call the witness list. All right, we'll begin. We have another air pollution control official with us this morning, Mr. Sed Redrin from the San Joaquin Valley. So we'll hear from Sayed first.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. It's a pleasure to be before you. I filled out a neutral card on my speaking card because I'm not sure what you were about to do. Today seems to be the day of 11th hour, 12th hour, and in this case maybe the 13th hour decision-making process in this. But if the board is simply looking at the staff recommendation, I do support the staff recommendation. And I hope that you do support that. I will take the good advice from board member D'Adamo and use every ounce of my self-control not to criticize the process. So I'll just focus on a couple of technical issues. Your staff did a great job presenting the facts with respect to this. I just wanted to add a couple of other points. We do have the toughest fireplace curtailment rule in the nation. And every time there was a prediction that the PM2.5 concentration might reach 30 microgram per cubic meter, which is well below the 35 microgram per cubic meter standard, we totally disallow any burning. So any of these extensions that you see on those days, about 50 to 100 days a year, during the summer and the winter time, no burning will be allowed of any kind. So I wanted to make sure you understand that. Agricultural burning has already been reduced by 70%. If you approve this recommendation today, we are moving towards 80-90% elimination of agricultural burning. But one point that I really wanted you to also consider is that in this rush hysteria to totally ban ag burning, the severe public health, detrimental public health impact of some of these alternatives are being overlooked. It is not simply a given fact that if you reduce agricultural burning, you get improvement in air quality. Some of these alternatives have more severe air quality impact that you should really know about. Diesel has been a big concern of yours to get the ag waste to these biomass facilities. First, you have to use dirty diesel engines to grind them, to shred them, and do it on the days where smoke management does not play a role. You can do them any time of day. It's not controlled like the ag burning is controlled. Diesel carcinogen risk from shredding. Then we have about 9 biomass power plants in the valley, 12 if you include the Sacramento region, about 30,000 square miles, where we have to get ag waste from 8,000 or more farms and ship them to these 8 or 9, 10, 12 biomass facilities. So a lot of truck emissions. And those trucks, if you've seen them, they're not our best trucks. These are not high-yielding operations, and they have to use the cheapest truck, the dirtiest truck, the oldest truck that we have. So a lot of emissions, truck emissions. And then you take these waste to biomass facilities. No question, if I could get a minute.
Please.
If you look at pound per pound, open burning versus burning in a well-controlled biomass facility, there was 80-90% reduction in emissions. But we're talking about 10 facilities being located, some of them in environmental justice areas, with the truck emissions, with the hot spots that we need to consider. So I ask that you consider that in your, this whole rush to totally eliminate ag burning. That is certainly something that we put in this 500-page report that your staff worked very closely with us and put in together. They did ask tough questions, held our feet to fire, and I think the report because of their work is much better than it is. So I'm not sure exactly where you're going with this. I had heard that there might be a proposal to do a 2-3 month kind of a deal. If that is still the case, I have another suggestion that I think with a slight difference may get you there and make everyone happy in this case. But
we were always interested in suggestions that make everybody happy, so please.
My understanding is that there is a 11th-hour deal to perhaps make your concur with the district, but make those concurrences go away in 2 to 3 months till you hear from Senator on his hearing and any findings that he might make. My suggestion is with a slight difference. It's a distinction without a lot of difference in terms of final outcome, but I think it maintains the integrity of the process. It reinforces the proud tradition that this board has had to always act based on best available information that is before you. It gives the senator the courtesy of hearing from him. I know this will get me a lot of, and from the emails if I say anything nice about Senator Flores, but he has been a leader in this area. This is his legislation, and we need to hear from him. So my suggestion is that make the finding, but set a date certain to consider his report from his hearing, if he's able to come up with his $10 million to help biomass, and then make a commitment today that you will consider that in 2, 3, 4 months, whenever it is appropriate, and make changes as necessary, as opposed to totally, circumventing the public process that we've been engaged in, totally ignored your reported and documented staff recommendation, and also put the burden of proof where it belongs. If the senator is able and willing to be a helpful player in this, you will definitely consider it. Our board has committed to consider it. So I would just suggest that slight twist if that's where you're going. Otherwise, I support the staff recommendation.
Well, we will be hearing from the senator's representative later in the program, but I appreciate that. It's a very constructive suggestion.
Right,
Mr. Adama?
I just have some questions about what's going to get you to 80%. Right now, you're at 70% reduction in ag burning. What's going to get you to 80% or possibly 90%? Is it the list of activities on slide 15? If we could get that slide back up, grapevine and cane prunings, et cetera, or is there something more than that list?
Well, just with the first of all, we are eliminating some additional material that no longer could be burned. The threshold for some of those case-by-case approvals or small farm approvals has been lowered from 20 to 15 acres, and we are working very closely with the ag community to develop alternatives. There is a rule that has come into my board concerning biomass power plants, solid fuel combustion boilers, and we are trying to encourage biomass facilities to actually accept a higher percentage of ag waste. Historically, they have been resistant to that. Right now, the economy is down, so there isn't a lot of construction waste, so they do take more ag waste now than they do. But under normal circumstances, their preference is to simply take the reliable, better-priced urban waste, unfortunately from Bay Area and South Coast, with all those trucks bringing them to the valley, which is not something that we like. So we're hoping the rule itself will get us to 80%. These additional measures that we're pursuing hopefully will get us to about 90%.
Okay. And since you flagged the issue of biomass, maybe as the witnesses come up, they can comment on this issue about the challenges with getting the product there. And I don't know what more we can do, but obviously with this additional time frame that we're looking at, I think we need to take on a very strong role with this. There's a lot of state and federal funding that are going to those facilities, and it just doesn't make sense that product is trucked in from other areas outside the basin for them to burn, and then they're turning away product that's you know, needs to find a home from within the valley. I know that, you know, there are obviously exceptions to that, as you say, with the economy being down and all that, but we need to get those numbers up.
One suggestion I might bring up, as you consider your renewable fuels rule or policy in a couple of months, that may be also one area where, you know, we could give a better or a greater degree of credit to facilities that use agricultural waste as opposed to urban waste.
Thank you. That's a very good suggestion. Dr. Tullis.
I'm down here in the dugout.
Yeah. You have to wave your hand. Hi.
Actually, it's kind of a question and a point to make. Slide 20, if everybody could focus on that, and if Syed could comment on this. If I understand right, implementing this
the air quality impact slide?
Yes. If implementing this as it stands doesn't affect the any health violation or any standard violation of any air quality standard in the valley. And if you look on slide 20, you kind of get an idea of how small this impact is. And my understanding in the valley, the as I was mentioning, that the fireplace burning is a significant thing. If my understanding is about 3 to 4 times the impact of what we're seeing here in ag burning. And there's really, from my understanding of this whole process, there's no measurable violation of any health standard if we implement. I just want everybody to understand there's no violation of any health standard on this proposal the way it stands right now.
Understood. We're dealing with a separate freestanding piece of legislation here that was an attempt to totally phase out ag burning.
I should also, the legislation has been very successful.
Yes.
And it has reduced ag burning 70%, 80%, 90%, and it has been its service for the valley, and now we're down to a level of some crops which are going to be difficult to address. And the legislation has done a good job, and I think Senator Flores should be complimented for that. But I also wanted to point out that the goal has reached. The health goal has been reached here, and now we're dealing with some economic issues.
Just to give you a comparison, during winter months, residential fireplaces contribute 30% to the PM2.5 concentrations that we see on bad air quality days. So this is really, you know, people have mentioned also using incentive funding to pay subsidized shredding and reducing them, helping these farmers get the material to the biomass facilities, perhaps in a more cost-effective way for them. But I think that's the wrong thing to do, because diesel combustion NOx emissions, the carcinogen emissions that you get from that is the is really what's causing all the trouble in San Joaquin Valley. And if we direct a lot of resources here, it may feel make you feel good, mm-hmm. but it'll have no impact on air quality.
Well, I think that's a good point. You know, one of the good things about AB 32, I happen to think there are many, but one of them is that it's really pushed us into doing life cycle analyses and much more holistic reviews of some of our policies. And I think this is one of those areas where we really do need to look at what the full range of alternatives are, not for today, but hopefully as we move forward in the future, there could be opportunities for alternative fueled chippers. You know, I mean, we haven't explored any of that really, I think, at this point. So thank you for your very helpful testimony. We'll hear next from Manuel Cunha and then from Shirley Batchman.
Good morning, I guess.
Still morning.
Madam Chairman and board members and staff, my name is Manuel Cunha, president of Nisei Farmers League. And the first comment is on behalf of all of the ag groups in the valley that worked hard over the past year and a half on pulling together the documents that went to your staff but also went to the San Joaquin Valley Air District to deal with economics and cost. And those numbers work very closely with the USDA, Joe Glauber, who is the head economist within USDA that I use for the Federal Reserve Board when I'm getting information. So that same information was used and presented to the staff in cooperation with the Cooperative Extension Service, UC Davis. That is the document that provides our farmers on what the costs are to farm in this state. And when you look at that, you really may want to say, why are farmers farming and losing the money they're losing? And every month when I give my farm report to the United States Treasury, it's not a pretty sight of economics. In this state, it's 47% of our farmers are in the hole. They're eating up their assets and they're eating up their equity. That's how they survive. And that's a shame. That's a horrible shame. But on this, I am a little bit confused. And Madam Chair, maybe you can help with this, and I hope this doesn't detract from the time, because I think some of us are confused. I'm not sure what we're supporting today. I do know this, and let me go through this if you don't mind. We support the five-year recommendation that our board adopted on the 20th of May. 2 days ago, I was contacted that there were some problems, and there was a two-year postponement from the 5 years. And that we would review all of the things that are necessary to see if we can do any alternatives to that. Then I get contacted last night, again, not having any input to any of these changes. Last night, after coming from Cal Poly, interviewing one of the new presidents on that campus, coming through the mountains, through 46, a lot of mountains there, staying on the road, I get this email with not in my hand, but listening through my, so I don't get a ticket either, that things have now changed to a three-month waiver stop. Again, no input to us. Now, I don't blame the staff. I don't blame the board. But I blame the process that it's not fair. When we spent so many months in year on this and not having any respect of calling us and saying this is coming down. Because I don't know what the three-month delay is going to do. I do know that my farmers are going to push trees out in a few days because the fruit, the variety, is not productive. If they don't push them out, then they're going to have to irrigate them and waste water. I just became quarantined in the San Joaquin Valley. And if I could have a minute more, I would appreciate that. San Joaquin Valley, Fresno now is quarantined for the vine ripe or the vine grapevine moth. The number one ag county in Fresno County has a 5 mile quarantine now radius, which is impacting close to 700 farmers. And if you don't know what a quarantine is, let me tell you, my farmers are getting calls from other countries saying they're not going to buy their product because of the moth.
I have to figure out what I need to do if I have farmers, and I've got five of them in a quarantine that do not take care of their farms because they're broke. I'm going to either have to dose that vineyards out and burn them because that insect is living in there. Or do I just destroy the San Joaquin Valley of the billions of dollars that it creates across this country? But I'm lost on what the staff is recommending. I know what I support is the 5-year because that's what we believed in. And when I was contacted by staff for the 2 years, I understand the length of needing some time to hear from some other folks, but there was a process. The only thing I ask, and let me leave you with this, is honesty, trust, integrity, and respect. And I look at two people, Lynn Terry and Karen Magliano, and John, where's he at, in the back. When we worked and developed a 60-some-odd million-dollar study, we trusted and respected each other. When I said I was going to bring money from Edwards Air Force Base, we did it, didn't we, Karen? And Lynn, we did it, didn't we? And I always came up with my respect of you folks to honor that. The only thing I ask of you is that you have to respect our industry and treat us when we work hard to do things to clean up the air. And that's what our goal is. My farmers are not to hurt anybody. So again, I'm lost. I don't know what the proposal is, but I do know that I have to support. And if it's a 2-year, okay. And we'll work with the staff to figure out our problems. But I just would like to be in the future. I think I've been fair in contacting you folks whenever we got problems. And I thank you, Madam Chair, for the extra few minutes. I apologize for that.
No problem. We will have a discussion of this as soon as we hear from everybody.
It is still morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. I am Shirley Batchman, and I'm with California Citrus Mutual. And as you can tell, one of the commodities that is being addressed in today's discussion. But first of all, I, too, am thoroughly confused about what we are discussing right now. Are you asking for our opinion on the presentation that was given? Are you looking for comments that I got 2 days ago on a 2-year? Or are we to comment on the opinion that we heard last night that this process has been hijacked and we are now looking at a 3-month? I don't know which one I'm to be commenting on right now. So I guess I need some clarity there. I do have some opinions about the 5 years. We've worked hard. It has been well documented. We met with staff. They agreed that everything was in order. Your recommendations show that. What SIAG has just given you as an alternative, I think there's value there in discussing that. I really do. But I will tell you, and I can't tell you how mad I was last night when I got a call that said that this process was being hijacked because Senator Flores wanted to further his political agenda. And make no mistake, that is what that is. I worked directly with Senator Flores when he authored SB 705. The morning that bill was heard, he called and said, I have 4 criteria, which is what you're discussing today. And he said, are you okay with that? Is that something that you think that you could support? And I told the senator those were worthy criteria and that they should be evaluated before we move forward. And I think we have met every one of those. And for us to trust him, as Manuel said, agriculture is, when we give you our word, it's our word. And now we trusted. I trusted Dean Flores. I took him at his word. And boy, what a fool we have been. So as we go forward, I have a lot to say about this process if it gets hijacked, because it certainly impinges the credibility and integrity of the process. And as we move forward, we have spent probably almost 6 months to a year now working with your staff on the farm equipment rule. I can't tell you how much time and how much money we have spent to help you get a reliable inventory. And now I tell you, I question whether do we stay with this or is any work that we bring to you, is it going to be arbitrarily dismissed? Because you have been given pressure by someone to further a political agenda. You need to make the decision where we're going to go in this venue. But I have to tell you, the trust is on thin edge right now. Thank you.
Thank you. We have only one more witness, as far as I know. That is Mark Arax, who represents Senator Dean Flores.
Thank you for having us. It's going to take a little bit more than 3 minutes to unpack this.
Okay? That's all right. So, we've given everybody a little more time. There's a smaller number of witnesses.
My name is Mark Arax. I'm the Senior Policy Director for Dean Flores, and I'm the consultant to the Senate's Air Quality Committee. You have a letter before you from Senator Flores. It's a clear and, I think, cogent letter that expresses why grape growers, citrus growers, and almond growers should not be allowed to continue burning. I'm not going to read from that letter, but one paragraph. Let me just frame this a little bit differently. We're not talking about, some agricultural burning has to happen. If you're a small raisin grower, 20 acres in the town of Fowler, and you have to pull out your vineyard because of nematodes or something like that, you can make a case that pulling out that vineyard and removing those wires is not economically feasible for you and you should burn. What we're talking about is something different. So this is not a total ban on ag burning. What we're talking about is what the district has done is exempted some of the wealthiest and biggest farmers who happen to be grape growers, citrus growers, and almond growers. And as we go over the math here, I will tell you why I think the math is very specious. And in some cases, the calculations are dishonest. I'm not sure if it's intentionally so or not, but that's the way it is, and I hope to make that case. The one paragraph I do want to read, since this thing is kind of fast-moving and there's some confusion, is this, and this is straight from Senator Dean Flores' mouth. In the name of public health, in sound science, I'm asking today that you delay for 60 days a decision on the Air District's flawed plan. This brief delay will allow me to convene a hearing of the Senate Select Committee on Air Quality. I'm confident this hearing will reveal the dishonest calculations the Air District used in its staff report to justify continued burning and lead CARB to a much different decision on the local Air District's, the merits of the local Air District's plan. I'm the son of a grape grower, the grandson of a raisin farmer. As an author, I've written a book called The King of California, which is a huge tome about the biggest farmer in America. And I like to think that I am a big supporter of agriculture. We need to applaud agriculture because many of my friends who are growers stopped burning 7 years ago. They shred, they chip. I don't know if it's 70% reduction. I don't know where that number comes from. But there has been a significant reduction. There still is a great deal, though, of agricultural burning continuing. And that's what we need to focus on. Grapevines and citrus trees, just those two, the uprooting of grapevines and citrus trees to plant a new vineyard or orchard. Today, they account for 62% of the farm material burned over the past 3 years in the San Joaquin Valley. So I think it's excellent that we can talk about farmers who have cut the old practice of widespread burning by 70%. But by the district's own calculations, this still leaves an unacceptable amount of pollutants from ag burning. 1,072 tons of NOx, 1,388 tons of PM2.5, 1,246 tons of VOCs, and 1,476 tons of PM10. They talk about just 2%, 3%. Dr. Tullis talked about that. But 2 and 3% in an air district that is not close to achieving federal standards is a significant amount of pollutants. Okay. Let me all of this kind of is rooted in an economic analysis that I want to unpack for a second here. It's very tough to follow. There are 15 different crops, and each of those crops has its own cultural practice, and some should be burned and some shouldn't, and there's diseases and all this. But I want to focus on just the three, the big three, and actually the big two, the vineyards and citrus orchards. Those will be totally exempt under the district's plan. They will be allowed to continue burning. So how did they arrive at the conclusion that grape growers and citrus growers should be allowed to continue burning? Well, they put together an economic feasibility study. And that study is problematic. We only discovered these problems a month ago when we got the draft report. We've been accused of doing this on the 11th hour, but it was only when I saw that draft report and started going through it that I started seeing some huge, huge problems in the assumptions that were made, the assumptions that underlie the conclusion. Let me just go over a couple of those. The Air District gives a lifespan to the vineyard and the citrus orchard. It gives a lifespan of 10 years. Now, that's important because that means that farmer is only accruing profits off that vineyard and orchard for 10 years, and every 10 years he has to replace it. So there are these replacement costs. But that 10 years is a bogus number. The Air District, in its own appendix, cites these studies by the University of California Cooperative Extension on almonds, on oranges, and on several kinds of table grapes. And let me tell you what this report finds on the lifespan of each of those crops. On oranges, it says on page 3, orange trees have a long production life if they are well maintained. The life of the orchard is assumed to be 40 years. Thompson Seedless Table Grapes, page 3. The establishment cost of putting in an orchard is spread over the remaining 22 years of the 25 years the vineyard is in production, not 10. Crimson Seedless Grapes. The grapevines are expected to begin yielding fruit in the third year and then be productive for an additional 22 years. Almonds, 25 years. So when you've taken the lifespan of something and halved it, what you've done is you've created an entire calculation that is wrong. So if you took the true lifespan of these vineyards and citrus orchards and almond groves, and you played out the profits and the costs over those 25 years, suddenly your bottom line has totally changed. It is economically feasible for those farmers, the bigger ones especially, to send their stuff to biomass or to shred it. So the entire calculation changes. The Air District, and I'm about to close here, the Air District finds incredibly so that to remove metal posts and trellis wires from vines accounts for 45% to 75% of a grape farmer's profit. I don't know where that figure comes from. Let me just play with a few numbers that are based on some of my friends in who are grape growers. You have a table grape vineyard, which is very much different than a raisin vineyard. Raisin vineyards, the profits aren't all that high. Table grape, much higher. In some cases, in many cases, $2,000 pure profit an acre. So if you have 500 acres, you're a rather large grower. Your net profit is $1 million a year. Let's assume that you have this profit for not 10 years, but 15 years of the 22-year lifespan, which is based on the actual lifespan of that vine. What the district has done has used an industrial equipment lifespan that might hold true for the oil industry, but it doesn't reflect the reality of trees and vines. So that vineyard I just talked to you about, over the lifespan, brings in a net profit in the range of $10 million. Yet the district incredibly comes to the conclusion that hiring a crew of field hands to remove the wires would consume 45 to 75% of those profits. They must be paying those field hands a pretty sum for it to be that. So what I would ask on behalf of the senator, the process is kind of fast moving. We would like to have a hearing, bring up the staff, the district staff who came up with this study to really, really puzzle out what happened and to see, you know, ask them some tough questions. And we want them to show their math. And until they do that, and the numbers prove otherwise, we feel that agricultural burning needs to be banned for vineyard removal, citrus removal, and for many almond growers who are removing their trees or pruning them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. I suspect that people are going to have questions to ask you and possibly others as well as we puzzle our way through this, but I just want to make sure that I'm accurately stating what's actually before us at the moment. So the reason why we're here today is because there is a June 1 deadline in statute by which all burning has to be stopped in this region unless the ARB concurs in the district's recommendation to continue to allow certain crops to be burned because of economic or technical infeasibility. I don't think it would be appropriate based on where we are today. Well, I should say the ARB has to do this concurrence. We're not asked to do our own study. We're not asked to go out and reinvent the information here, nor are we really in a position to do that. Our staff did participate, I believe, quite extensively along with the San Joaquin District. And frankly, I think that the burden is on those who believe that what they did was inappropriate to justify that position. And I understand that you've made some strong statements here, and I assume you have additional backup information and experts to bring to bear, which is why the senator wants to have this this hearing. I must say, in terms of the people who critique the process, it is unfortunate that this is playing itself out in front of the ARB. You know, we're a state agency. We obviously have a role to play here because of the statute, and we are required, I believe, to give a fair amount of deference to the author of the legislation. Nevertheless, I really think this is a discussion that should have taken place with the district. I feel like we should be mediating
we tried to do that last week.
Here as opposed to, presiding in a hearing process. So having said that, it seemed to me that the recommendation that we heard from SAED is not that different from what you're
proposing.
No, it
isn't. I think it's pretty close.
So here we are. The one thing I don't want to see happen is a ban fall, on June 1st that disrupts everything while this is all cast into disarray. And so I guess I need to know from our attorneys how we prevent that from happening if we were to grant a short continuance on this item.
One option you have would be to adopt a resolution that would concur with the district's determination for, say, 2 months or 3 months, and then if new information comes up during that period of time, you could revisit that concurrence in a few months and decide one way or the other. So in other words, you would do a concurrence for a limited duration of 2 or 3 months. That is a possibility you would have, and and we believe that's a legal possibility that's authorized.
So it'd be like a 60-day concurrence in effect? But that would there have to really be a date certain. I think it's correct that we can't just leave this hanging. Is that perhaps could we ask you to I'm sorry to put you up here, but can we ask you to state whether that does what you
I think that's what the senator wanted. I what we want is a chance to have this hearing and we can do that in the next 60 days. Mm-hmm. And if the law is only, I mean, if this if this report is adopted just on a temporary basis for 60 days, and then our hearing really raises serious questions about the conclusions that were made, then we can come back and the process can begin anew, I guess.
Well, I don't want to make any presumptions that, you know, if there are serious factual allegations about the report, if there are inaccuracies, I have a considerable amount of faith, which perhaps the senator doesn't share, that the district would want to correct the record itself.
I would hope so.
We should start with any assumptions that they're not trying to do the best possible job of analysis that they can. But again, I know he's right in the back by there. If you don't mind sharing the podium for just a second here. Thanks.
I appreciate Mark mentioning that he's okay with my suggestion. Mine had a slight twist to what he suggested, and I think it actually accomplishes the same thing, but it really respects the process and really puts your board in a position to act based on best available science data before you right now. Instead of adopting a temporary concurrence, my suggestion is that you vote to concur with the findings, mm-hmm. but make a commitment with a date certain to come back in 60 mm-hmm. days, whatever, to reconsider. That way you give the senator the courtesy that I believe he deserves, but put the burden of proof, as you stated, where it belongs, that they have to come up with the information to undo your concurrence. So that was a distinction I was making.
Okay, I understand. Comments? Sorry.
I don't think we would be comfortable with that. I think because it seems to have a certain kind of permanence that would bother us. I like the approach that you came up with, which is 60 days, temporary, and then we come in with all this other information. We vet it the way it should have been vetted in the first place.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but at the risk of offending a person who I think has been a friend to the ARB and to AIR in general, I think the comments that were made about the process hold a lot of sway. I do feel that not just the district, who obviously we work with on a day-to-day basis, but the agricultural community participated in good faith, and clearly this is a last-minute a change from their perspective, and people are feeling a little bit whipsawed. You'll have plenty of opportunity, or the senator will, to bring people in and cross-examine them very effectively. And if we set a date today to bring this back to the board, we can guarantee that there will be an opportunity for us to make change if there is a need to change.
That's
so
question.
We have 90 days? I'm sorry. Oh, because of the August... it would be September, the September board meeting, where we have many other interesting things on the agenda. We may have to schedule an extra meeting.
From the dugout, you have to tell us.
Yes.
Yeah. You mentioned there's a letter. I don't have a copy of that letter.
Oh, I thought those staff distributed them in our packets. They just came in today.
Okay. Okay, thank you. You mentioned in the I read your book, by the way. It's excellent.
It is.
And
I agree.
Thank you.
And I wish everybody here would read it. They have a better understanding of what happens in the San Joaquin Valley. You mentioned that Senator Flores, in the name of public health and science, wanted to do these efforts here. And if you're aware of any science that the public health would be impacted by, you know, proceeding as is, I would be very much would want that information, because as I understand, the public health really wouldn't be impacted by the way the thing currently reads. But if you have any information on that, I think that would be important for at least me in the local district to understand.
I look at it a little differently. The public health is impacted. I live in Fresno. I've lived there most of my life. When I speak at schools, I ask kids to raise their hand who's on inhalers, and it stuns me sometimes, 1 in 2, 1 in 3. So the public health is impacted. We need every bit of clean that we can get. So to thumb your nose at 2 and 3%, if that is even true, 4 and 5%, it seems to me to be a kind of arrogance that we can't afford in the San Joaquin Valley.
Well, the way the smoke management plan works is the burning does not occur on at times when there would be a violation of air quality. So if there's a little bit of emissions at a time where there's not a air quality violation, it's hard to document an impact on public health.
That's a lot of moving parts, though, and if you drive through Hanford and Delano and Parlier on some of the days when burning isn't allowed, you'll see a lot of burning taking place.
Could I ask maybe some specific comments or questions about the resolution?
Yes, certainly.
And maybe the Senator's office can address these too. In attachment A, everybody have that? Many of these things, and they're all should be recognized as excellent points at the bottom there. Work with the state legislature and the California Energy Commission and the California Department of Food and Agriculture to obtain incentive funding to increase utilization of agricultural waste at biomass facilities. What does that mean exactly? Who's going to do this, and how are we going to measure progress in that sentence?
I'm not sure I can answer that. That's a little bit beyond
The reason why I bring that up is because every time we talk about biomass plants and everything, we bring these things up and nobody takes ownership of it. And I'm just wondering who is taking ownership of this and who is going to move it on. Will the Senator's office move it on?
I think so.
This is basically a legislative thing that needs to be done. And we've requested all these items to be done before, and nobody's taken ownership of them.
Just in fairness, there is a state biomass task force, which is led by the Energy Commission. I know my good friend and former ARB executive officer Jim Boyd has devoted years of his life to promoting this cause. I don't disagree that there's a lot more that needs to be done, but I think there is some ownership here. I would agree that ARB itself could be more active. This could be a higher priority item, and I would certainly like to have a commitment from the Senator that this is one that he wants to pursue, but frankly, I did have a conversation with him. I didn't have a conversation. I had an exchange, I guess, with him.
All emails.
Email. 2 days ago, in which he did make that commitment, and I believe it's. I give him every credibility in that regard. I think he is sincerely motivated to try to move that along.
Well, what I'm basically asking is there going to be a separate committee here that works with the Senator's office that's going to work? If we're going to do this, we have to measure some progress we're actually doing something rather than writing the sentence down, because the sentence has been written in this form many times.
I think that's a good point.
We, at our legislative action in the San Joaquin Valley, we've been asking for this for a long time, for some stability in the biomass plants, and we're not getting anywhere. It's now a part of this resolution, and to me, it's meaningless unless somebody actually owns this and is going to do something about it.
I think we'll own it. I'm there. I live just a few blocks away from the Air District office. I'll be in there working with staff if you need be. I think the Senator is committed as well.
Well, I'd be more than happy to nominate you, Dr. Tellis, along with our other Valley resident, as a committee of two to continue to pursue this item, if you're willing to accept that. Okay. Did you have a point? Yes, Dee Dee?
Well, not maybe just some comments to move this along. I'll just say that it's a very tall order. I know we've talked about this for many years. I think that it needs to be tied to funding. I think that's the only thing that's going to get this moving along. Those facilities do receive funding, and we need to have some requirements when they get those grants. That's going to take more than 2 to 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really grappled with this. I think that the district, I have seen this issue progress over the last 10, 15 years from a hell no, we won't go, we're not going to let anybody tell us what we can burn and what we can't burn, to a situation where we're looking at 80%. And Syed, maybe if you could answer this question, when this issue came before us in 2005, was it 2005 when it came before us last? Where were we at that point, and how much further have we gotten since it came before us last and now? Just to put this in perspective, that we keep, no pun intended, but chipping away at these emissions.
The graph that your staff had showed the progress over the years. There has been a 50% reduction just from 4 or 5 years ago. Just to answer your question.
Yeah, so I think it's very unfortunate that it has come to us in this setting, because there's been a lot of collaboration at the district, and I agree with the chairman. These issues should be discussed at the district, and I understand that there were representatives from Senator Flores' office at the district. I believe the district had this before it a week and a half ago. But there have been numerous, this didn't just come up a week ago. There have been, there's been a long involved process. It's been workshopped, a number of meetings, not just at the district, but with the stakeholders, and also, ARB staff. And so, I have faith in that process. Now, can the district do better? I think we can always do better. I think certainly the senator is the author of the legislation. He deserves a courtesy. But my boss is a member of Congress, and, you know, when he writes a letter demanding things, we don't always get our way. And so I'm looking for a way to move this forward. I do think that what's missing here in the discussion is that growers do need some level of certainty. I don't know if we've got the time right now, but, you know, I think Shirley Batchman could probably answer this question about, you know, growers that have to pull trees, remove vineyards, remove orchards, and, you know, have they already put in their orders for new trees? If they don't, if this ban doesn't go forward, or if this allowance doesn't go forward, what are growers supposed to do? Leave the trees that are not productive in the fields? I'm not talking about a tree that's diseased. We know we've got an exemption for that. But do we just put water on those trees if it was selective removal? Well, we've got a water supply crisis in the valley, and it just doesn't make sense to put water on trees that are slated for removal. So there are a lot of questions that are raised, I think, in us not going forward. I think for a couple of months, you know, we can deal with that, but we've got to get on this and move forward. I'm comfortable with adopting the staff's recommendation of 2 years, but calendaring it and really being serious about listening to the senator, let him have his hearing, and we have it on our calendar, you know, to bring it back. I don't know if the board would go along with that or not, but I'm committed to having further discussions. I'm willing to spend a little bit more of my time to move this along, but I think ultimately we're going to end up where we are right now with the staff's recommendation, and the real progress that needs to be made, I think, are in two areas: biomass, and secondly, a better relationship between the senator and the district. That's where those discussions need to take place.
Well, I will accept that as a resolution or a motion, and it's been seconded now that we would adopt the staff recommendation of a concurrence that would be effective for 2 years. But we would also then calendar a board hearing to review new information that may be developed over a 90-day period, and obviously that would permit, if the information justifies it, a withdrawal of the concurrence or a change in the concurrence. But up until that time, we will have concurred. That's the motion and the second.
Point of clarification, what does a concurrence mean? What happens at 2 years?
We would have to redo that. The district would have to come back with
another
report.
Does it mean the
report.
Whole rule is redone, or does it mean that, what does that process
any changes would have to be anything. You're back to the square of having to justify continued burning of everything that you wish to continue to burn after 2 years.
If I could clarify what I heard with the motion, is I understand that the board would concur today with the district's determinations as mentioned in the resolution, and there would be a condition that if the board determines in the future that the criteria specified in the statute are not met, then the board reserve the right to withdraw its concurrence. Is that what the
yes,
motion
and
was?
And then we would calendar such a calendar a hearing on that item within 90 days.
And just a point of clarification, the concurrence was for 2 years.
Right. The concurrence itself is
yeah, the concurrence would be for 2 years with the condition that if during that two-year period the board would to decide, gee, at this point the conditions specified in the statute were not met, you could withdraw the concurrence and make a different determination.
Correct. Sorry. Did you have a question or comment?
Principle or just part of it that we could agree with?
You would have the option to
oh, we
look
would
at
have the option
each specific crop
yes.
and decide on each specific basis
yes.
whether you want with right. Determinations are met for that crop or not.
Right.
So along with this, we would make a date certain commitment for the, within the next few months to get any feedback from the senator's hearing.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. And that would be the basis for the hearing, and,
right.
Unless he requests that we not hold it. Or, I mean, I suppose we could always decide not to hold the hearing, but the resolution is that we will hold the hearing, and that we'll receive the information that will come from the senator's hearing and any other information that may be submitted. Yes.
I'd just like to mention that I'm very mindful that the alternatives need to be also very health-based and to look at unintended consequences of those alternatives. And being in business, I see figures all the time, and we look for figures, but when we really sit down and analyze what the possibilities are, we really need to constantly ask what are the unintended consequences. So I would encourage the hearing to also not only challenge the figures, which I think absolutely is appropriate, but in looking at the alternatives, what are the impacts of those? Thank you.
In that regards, I mean, are you suggesting that we do a life cycle analysis of carrying some chip material from the field to from Porterville to Mendota? That's basically what has to be done.
I'm just saying that I'm very uncomfortable trying to second guess on a limited amount of information which alternative is better and not, you know, just from my own perspective.
To be feasible, an alternative, I mean, if we're going to make a finding that there are no feasible alternatives.
And that's kind of a complicated thing to do. And who's, is the senator's office going to do that, or is the local district or the ARB?
Sad.
We'd be more than happy to do that. In fact, in this report, we did do some of that, which actually showed there are potential areas of problem along the lines that.
But we would also like to hear from the affected parties, from the industry, and from and I think from the senator's office as well, because these are matters of opinion or shading to some degree. There will be data, but there will also be questions, and so I think we're going to have to look at that.
Yes, and Madam Chairman, I was going to say something after the motion, but I think it's appropriate here. As I heard the senator's office and the testimony, I heard you say you were going to look at the report and challenge the staff in the preparation of the report. I think you need to go further, and I'm going to make the assumption and hope that you would never forget to consult and hear from the growers. Because I think they're very critical to understand what is happening. And I say that, and I know you talked a little bit about your background being agricultural. My background is the same. Some of what you pointed out is accurate from my basis of knowledge regarding citrus. However, I also know that my basis of knowledge is now probably 30 years ago, and there may be new techniques raising certain crops that weren't done 30 years ago. I don't know, but the point of my
concern is, I very much want to have included in the testimony in that the senator is going to hear that from the growers themselves. It is critical to making this all work, because we can theorize all we want to theorize and all our numbers, but unless you truly understand how it is to raise the crop, you've missed the whole thing. So I see your head nodding.
No, in the last week alone, I've talked to 6-7 growers. I talked to one of the authors of the very University of California cooperative extension reports that district used, and this is when I found out that in these reports, the lifespan was double, triple, quadruple what the district had used. So we are committed to talking to all those folks. I won't use the word stakeholders, because I think that's become, it's a cliche now. So, but we will talk to everybody who has, a strong interest in this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
One final comment, please.
Yes, sir.
And this is for Mr. Erak's benefit. To my perception, the weakest link in this whole process is not the grower, although the price is very important on what the grower gets for the chips. Or the price of the chips is important for the grower because it will reduce his cost. But the weakest link is really the chipper shredder. And we're about, with ARB, we're about to eliminate the chipper shredder industry because of the off-road rule. I don't think there's many chipper shredders out there who are compliant with any of the diesel regulations that we have. And they're at the bottom of the food chain. They have the oldest equipment, and they potentially are threatened to go out of business if with the off-road rule that is coming up.
with all due respect, we could defer that discussion to another day, but I'm not going to let the statement stand that we are going to do away with that industry. That will not happen, but I understand the concern. And it has to be factored in.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, we have a resolution in front of us with a second. Are we prepared to vote at this time? All right. All those in favor of the resolution, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It carries. Thank you very much.
And to clarify, the resolution was approved with the modifications we discussed earlier.
Yes, correct. With the modifications, exactly. All right. We have a brief report. It will be brief on the new EPA monitoring requirements. The person who requested that briefing isn't in the room at the moment, but it'll take a minute to get this organized, I think. We do have public comment. Yes.
Given the fact that Dr. Bones had to go, we could continue this to the next board meeting if he wanted
to. I'm sorry, did he leave it?
I think he had to catch a flight.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize that he had left. I thought he just did
that. So that is an option if you want to continue this to the next.
Well, I think that would be fine. I think mostly what he wanted was to have the briefing occur as opposed to at this moment. So we can certainly defer it and just go directly to the general public comment then. We do have time reserved for members of the public who simply want to comment. And so there's one, Patty Krebs of the IEA.
Chair Nichols, members of the board, welcome. We're really glad you're having a meeting here in San Diego. We're a local industry group. We have very diverse types of companies within our association. AB 32 is always on our agenda every month, every air committee meeting. And while you were here, I thought I'd just take a minute to give you some feedback on what companies are talking about, what we're hearing as the whole process unfolds. Certainly everyone really appreciates the state's leadership on the green jobs, developing the new technologies, and driving the energy efficiency programs. That's all good. It's good for business, and very glad to see that happening. But as AB 32 progresses on, we get many questions and areas of uncertainty. So I thought I'd just quickly run through what some of the common themes are so you could hear what the companies who aren't in the mainstream in Sacramento every day, what they're thinking about. First, the magnitude and complexity of the program. It's really difficult for many companies to keep up to date. They don't have the sufficient information and the understanding of all the different parts and aspects of the program to drill down into being able to actually determine how will it affect my facilities, my operations, my future business, and my costs. Your webinars are great. Every time I've called the staff, they've been very helpful in answering our questions. But the amount of time required to really track this and monitor it is quite overwhelming. The second thing we hear frequently is early action credit. San Diego has some very progressive companies. They've, for many years, taken steps to improve their buildings, improve their energy efficiencies. They want to know how they will get credit. When and how will they get the credit? Another issue is the consistency of protocols and formats. We had a number of companies in the California Climate Action Registry. That work then was not transferred over when the ARB adopted a different approach. So we would urge you to do everything possible through registries, through the federal government program, to coordinate and recognize the work that has already been done and make it applicable to what they have to do in the future. We always have questions on some of the critical elements of the program, how it will work, what is the future role, if there is one, for the local districts in permitting, auditing, reporting, which sources and companies will be capped, and how will companies get their baselines. Those are all things that they're very anxious about. And probably the last thing is what many of them feel to be the disproportionate attention on the new jobs. They work for great companies. They feel the focus, the incentives, the emphasis all seem to be on bringing something new in, whereas they would like to see equal attention to how to keep their companies here, how to protect the existing operations and jobs, and how to help them get through this AB 32 process and be in compliance. We realize that it is a major work still in progress, but we hope these were some constructive comments that we made, and we thank you for your time.
Those are excellent comments. If you wouldn't mind, would you leave a business card so that we could get in touch with you as we go
surely.
On?
Mm-hmm, surely.
You're probably
thank
on
you.
Various mailing lists,
yes.
but we
mm-hmm.
appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay. That's it for the public comment. We do have an executive session scheduled to discuss litigation, so we will recess, and at the end of the executive session, I or someone will come out and just make an announcement of what decisions, if any, were made at that meeting, and then we will adjourn after that. So that's it. Thank you very much, everybody.
Of course, the season is...
Okay, good.
This is Bob Jenny again with Take Two. I guess the first event the audio wasn't on, so I'm Bob Jenny, Assistant Chief Counsel of the Air Resources Board, and Mary Nichols asked me to come out here and say that we have concluded the closed session of the Air Resources Board and to announce that no action was taken by the board. So with the conclusion of the closed session, the Air Resources Board meeting this day has come to an end, and we'll close the record.